This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions of the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. My name is Trigger, and I'm joined by Dylan just days after Thanksgiving. So, Dylan, happy belated Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, Strig. It was so good. And I know they don't celebrate Thanksgiving in Germany, at least the same day as us. I think every place has a Thanksgiving adjacent holiday, which is basically just a day where you eat a lot. So I like to think the Germans have their own version of that. Am I right?
It's called Christmas.
Well, we have that in America. But yes, Thanksgiving was interesting. I felt bad because my nanny, and she, you know, everybody knows, if you're from the South especially, everybody has that grandma or that great-grandma that is an expert cook and can make all kinds of Southern food. And that's Nanny for us. And this year, she actually didn't feel that good. She was laying down a lot. She didn't feel like cooking. So hopefully everybody can wish her getting well soon. And she's already feeling a little better. But me, myself, Grandpa Ken, Mama, we all handled a lot of the cooking and the stuff on that day this year for the first time. And it turned out pretty good. You know, we had turkey. We didn't have the potatoes with the broth because we didn't have a ham this year. So I was very unhappy about that. It's a weird Thanksgiving this year, everybody says. But, I mean, they live right, you know, like, Mama and my sister live right across the street, so it's really no craziness or anything like that with us. I know, I feel for a lot of people that had people at other cities that would have to fly in and all that bullcrap. You know, because you couldn't really do that this year. Or you weren't supposed to, anyway. Anyway.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to, but, I mean, it's really difficult to just not get together as a family on these days. So, yeah. I mean, who can fault anyone for that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm not going to be getting crazy on anyone. But for us, it was easy because they're right there pretty much. They came and we ate. And, you know, it was a pretty good dinner all in all. You know, I have to say this, Strigger, but there was something that was not making me happy this week. And it is a company that has, in a lot of ways, ruined my life, Strigger. So I really want to take this time and use this platform, this wonderful platform of the Eastern Lariat, to call them out. And that company is called Mattress Firm. I ordered a mattress about a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And everything was good when I ordered it. It was a good sale and all that. We know Black Friday has come and went now. But that's a big time for selling stuff online. But I got a deal on it. It was like, you know, maybe $130, I think, for the mattress. And the problem is, I mean, it would have cost a little more, but the problem is that I ordered it too small, accidentally. Or they clicked it too small. It was a twin size, and I needed a bigger size. So immediately, like literally, it was just an honest mistake. I canceled it. I mean, first of all, another thing, their way of canceling things is so unnecessarily difficult that it pissed me off. But secondly, first of all, I had to call.
You're supposed to cancel.
I wanted to cancel. I had to call. They said, we can't do it on the call. You have to give us your number to text you. We'll send you an agent at your store. Okay, let's text. He tells me, oh, we don't have that in our computer. You got to go to the website and chat. And I was like, well, I called already. But I go to the chat, and they tell me, okay, Dylan, your bed is canceled. No problem. It's all good. And everything's okay. And I said, okay, no problem. And they said, we have to reroute it or whatever because it was on FedEx. We'll get it back and we'll give you a refund. Okay, what happens next? I get a message saying, it was delivered.
Of course.
Oh, okay. Except the problem is it wasn't delivered, Striga. At least not to me. Maybe they delivered it to someone else. But it was not delivered to me at all.
just some random other Dylan.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe they had a number wrong. You know, maybe my next door neighbor has a new mattress that I don't know about. But as for me, they did not deliver it. So all this time I've been waiting. And also another thing is they told me when they ordered, you know how they say, oh, it's expected to be delivered by this date. It said the 24th through the 26th. And when did they send me the message? After I canceled it. Miraculously, the day I canceled it was the day that it got delivered somehow, according to their system. That's what it says now. So I don't know how that happened. I went to cancel it and somehow they delivered it. But regardless, I have no mattress and no refund. Or a refund. So I am not happy about this right now, Stringer. I've sent a very politely worded email to them.
That's good. That's good because I guess it was an honest mistake because, as you said, at this time of the year,
Yes, it's
there
true.
are a lot of people ordering stuff online. And I mean, I like to think that there is now a mattress just floating around somewhere.
Listen, I do live in a place where it is called the River City.
See?
So perhaps it's literally floating down the river. FedEx just dropped it in the river. They said, we don't know who's getting this thing. They canceled it, so we're just going to throw it in the river. But I have to call up Mattress Firm right now because they've yet to respond to me on this, on the chat, on email, on phone. Nothing is coming through right now. So Mattress Firm has got to get it together, or can I sue somebody for like a mattress? Is that possible, Striga? Do you think could that work in Germany?
No, maybe it works in America.
America is nice about laws and things like that sometimes. So hopefully there's a law about mattresses that we don't know about. If there are any lawyers, please message me and we can talk about this because I'm considering legal action. Listen, this is no chump change, Stringer. This is a fine. This was a what do you call it? One of the new age mattresses with the foam technology, the memory foam mattresses.
Oh
Stringer,
yeah.
this isn't some box spring bullcrap. This isn't even a waterbed. This is a memory foam mattress. Space age technology. They used to advertise that they dropped a bowling ball on it and it wouldn't break eggs somehow. That's the mattress I want. I've always wanted it, Stringer, and they're taking my dreams away and my money. So I cannot let this slide.
Dude, I did not expect this mattress talk because you went right to that from Thanksgiving. Because I originally was going to ask you for some, because usually on this show, on the early minutes, we talk about like cooking and all that stuff,
Yeah,
and
we do like food on the show.
you were all right on that way, and I don't really have anything to add to your mattress talk,
I just want to put
quite
that out there for the lawyers or the mattress expert.
honest.
If you work at a mattress
Yes,
shop, let me know. I could give you an
please.
Eastern Lariat discount on there. Yes, what about
Well,
food do you want to ask
yeah,
me?
I was thinking about like what I was going to or what I'm going to do make for cook for Christmas with my parents. We of course have our main dishes. We have that sorted, but I was going to ask you about what could you recommend for a side for Christmas that's from the southern kitchen that I really wouldn't know about in Germany that I've never heard about maybe.
Well, when it comes to the sides, what do you think about some chicken and dumplings, maybe? That's an appropriate side, very southern style side, I would
Yeah.
say, soul food esque side. Not too hard to make, either. So you can get those. I've mentioned the potatoes often, depending on how you would like them, whatever broth you would like to use. That's a very southern side. Cornbread is very
Oh
popular.
yeah,
We
cornbread sounds good, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good side to have. We had that on Thanksgiving, actually. And I think that's something that not everybody in America would have. If you're a southern state or a southern family, you would definitely have the cornbread, but not everybody has that. There's this map going around about the favorite sides of all the states in America.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm not buying some of these maps that are coming up because there's other ones that are like about fast food. And one of them for the Tennessee, the state that I live in, that restaurant, I've never even heard of it, the one they had on there, like, or that fast food establishment. I don't even know if it's real. So I'm not buying that. I'm not buying the Thanksgiving side dishes, but I can tell you what me and my family have, Stringer. And you're getting the cornbread. Let's see. For Christmas, that's more sometimes you'll have a hen or a ham as well. That's the main dish. You said you had the main dishes.
Yeah.
Did already. I'll say this. My family really likes sweet potatoes. How do you feel about the sweet potatoes,
I
Stringer?
love sweet potatoes. Just earlier today, I cooked a soup with sweet potatoes and some bell peppers, some onions, you know, I really love them.
I think the sweet potatoes and the yams, those are good things, if depending on what you want to call them. Sometimes you'll even make, like, they'll make fries out of the sweet potatoes. They'll make sweet potato fries, if you want to do
that. I've created some of my own because I have this air fryer.
Ah, the air fryer. Okay, see, that. Now you're doing good, Stringer. Like I said, you've got that. That's like, that and the magic bullet, I think, are my favorite kitchen accessories. Do you have the magic bullet?
No.
Well, I know everybody's probably saw the infomercial for this. If you're my age, if you're between 20 and 35, probably you have seen this. And America,
I'm just looking at it. Yes.
Yeah. See, they probably had a German version of this somewhere. It's a little blender like thing, except all you have to do is press the button down. You press it the top down, and it blends. It's magical. That's why it says it right on the name, Magic Bullet. So you can make all kinds of stuff with that too. As well, so I recommend using the magic bullet to your discretion, especially when it comes to chopping up vegetables. You can mix them well. You said you made an omelet earlier. It's really good for those as too. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend the magic bullet. That's free advertising. Although I gave bad press to Mattress Firm, so I have to give it back with good publicity for something else.
By the way, we are not getting any money off these free ads that Dylan is throwing out here.
Mattress Firm is a negative ad. Right now.
But any publicity is good publicity.
Controversy creates cash. someone once said in Wrestling Stringer.
I didn't make any cash at all.
No cash is made. Except, in fact, I've lost money due to Mattress Firm. So controversy is losing me cash at the moment. So clearly someone lied. And I know that's hard to believe in wrestling that someone would lie. But that's where we're at right now. I've been lied to. But I would never lie to the listeners, and I know you wouldn't either. And hopefully we have a lot of truths to tell today, because there's some controversy that we're going to talk about on one of these shows, especially, that we're getting into. The Noah show in particular, I think there was some controversy in some matches, to say the least.
Yeah, so we have basically three topics today. First, I want to touch on the Corona situation in Japan. Then we're going to talk about Big Japan and their recent Osaka show, and of course we talk about the big Noah show with Shiozaki versus Nakajima. And yeah, first of all, COVID-19, it's getting worse in Japan. It's still a far cry from either of our countries, Dylan, but they had an all-time high this Saturday with over 2,600 cases in the country, over 400 of them alone in Osaka. And while there have been no reports of any transmissions in wrestling crowds, 2AW canceled their Sunday show on Sunday the 29th due to them and the Shiba City Public Health Center not being able to identify close contacts. They didn't really specify what they meant or what show they meant, but I guess they meant their November 22 show where Yasu Urano wrestled and he was tested positive for COVID-19. Quiet Storm recently also had a test. It came out negative, but he still was told to stay at home until December 6th. Then, on top of that, the Yoshi scene is hit real hard by COVID. Basically, due to the fact that all promotions but Stardom are sharing talent. And so 5 POJ wrestlers tested positive. Among them, Akari. And Akari also wrestled on a PPP show. And Tsukushi and Yappy were close contacts with her as well. And then one Marvelous trainee was also tested positive, which is why the entire Marvelous crew now is quarantining as well. So they had to pull off from their Sendai Girls show, where they were supposed to have had a 7-vs-7 tag match. The Yoshi scene is getting hit real hard, and there's all kinds of craziness going on with all the COVID situation. And at the same time, companies are running big shows, much like New Japan and Noah. DDT is running Kurikan Hall. Big Japan had the big show. So, I don't know, man. In March, they closed down everything. No live events. Now the situation is getting worse and worse, and they are still not closing down anything. I read that part of the new spike is their system of supporting local restaurants. They have this Go to Eat campaign where you can eat together with four or five people and you get coupons and you got points. And now they are backtracking on that. And the Osaka prefecture, for example, has backtracked on that and to like prevent more and more people eating together in public.
Yeah, you know, and I think that was clearly that whole initiative was to boost business up after they shut things down, you know, obviously. And we're seeing now that when you open things up, it's just inevitable at this point without any kind of, you know, way to prevent this or cure it, obviously, that if you put these things in place where people are going out and about and eating. And I think also a big problem with this is that if you give people an inch, they'll want to get another inch, you know, pretty much. So even if that idea would be safe on paper, in real life, people want to get out. And like you said, you know, just like with the Thanksgiving stuff, like, yes, maybe it would have been better that nobody traveled anywhere. But you can't dictate humanity at the end of the day. You know, we're all people, after all, and not everybody's perfect. And people are going to want to get out. That's just human nature. So when you see stuff like that going on, it's inevitable that somebody might not, you know, might color outside the lines a little bit. And when you do that in a situation like this, in a pandemic, every inch that they take is real important. And that could cause some problems because it really only takes one person. Just like you said, a lot of those girls in the Joshi scene were not positive. It just took one of them, and suddenly now four or five or six people at a time is at risk. And multiply that by a whole city. Look where, you know, that's where we've gotten now. And it's kind of a sad thing. But I think when you opened up, like when they made the decision to open things up more, you have to know that this is the kind of thing that is either going to happen for sure or at best very likely to happen if you understand human dichotomy. So I feel like when they open it up, you have to know that this is a possibility. And the same thing that's happening in America, same thing that's happening in Germany. But, you know, it's not like it's impossible is the crazy thing about it, because we've seen other countries do so well and handle it so well, and places like New Zealand, Taiwan, Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
They're basically, you know, good right now. Like, you know, back to normalcy. And we're lagging behind because of these reasons.
Well, Japan used to be very good at that, too. And all these countries that you just mentioned, Taiwan, New Zealand, I think they benefit from being an island.
Yes,
that's
true.
That's just how it is.
Japan, what you'd think, would benefit from that, too.
Yeah, you'd think.
yeah, but I don't really have an explanation for that, like you said, because it just seems like maybe the rules weren't followed. Maybe they opened up a little too early. Like, maybe they could have held it down. And I know that certain countries take it deeply serious whenever there's even a single, you know, single person. You know, because remember those early days, even in Japan, it's like, in America, it was like 1,000 people a day or something. And then in Japan, it would be like 7 people a day would be considered an outbreak. And in America, we wouldn't even care about that, pretty much. But in Japan, it would be a totally different thing. So, you know, they were good at it, but when you open things up like that, you know, like you said, 7 people a day can become 100 people a day real quick, you know?
The difference, of course, between Japan on one side and Taiwan and New Zealand on the other side is that Taiwan and New Zealand, they don't have the Olympics coming up next year.
That's an excellent point right there, too. And I think that's really, even at the beginning, remember, they tried to stretch that out for as long as possible. Yeah, because that's for the reason why, is because of the Olympics.
And in Europe, to make the comparison there, Austria, they are trying to make the next skiing season work, because that's supposed to start after Christmas, usually in late January, early February. The skiing season starts, and it is a massive, massive part of the Austrian economy, that a lot of tourists come to Austria for skiing reasons. And if they can't, they are really suffering. And so they are trying to make that work, but right now, nobody really knows how.
Yeah, it's just a complicated issue when it comes to that, because this is financial stuff we're talking about right now when it comes to something like that. And You know, there's a similar situation even in America. Next month, the NBA season, the basketball season is starting, and they took off a long time, and they came back for these playoffs in what was called the bubble. So that's basically, they locked everybody in this place for the like a month or two.
Like Fight Island that the UFC did.
Yeah, yeah, similar to the UFC, if you're familiar with that, the Fight Island, yes. But it was like in Disney World or something, this NBA season. But basically, they locked these guys up in the bubble, and it was like, look, if you leave, you're out. Like, you're out for the season if you leave this bubble. And that actually happened to one guy who wanted to go to a strip club. And he was suspended for the entire season. And I'm sure his team was super pissed about it.
I love it.
Yeah, that did happen. I'm not making that up, people. But yeah, so like...
Priorities started.
He had his priorities in place. But I've never been to a strip club, actually, so I can't say for sure. But regardless, I have to say that besides that guy, pretty much everybody else who stayed in the bubble, it worked like a charm. There really was no outbreak or anything crazy going on. Everyone was safe. There was no fans or anything like that there. But they were able to do their TV deal, and I wouldn't know how that works in a situation such as Austria. Obviously, every country is different. But we've seen now in the NBA, and this just goes to the financial and economic situation, this next month, they're going to be doing it without the bubble. It's going to be regular fans, even as cases spike huge in America. You can look at that, and now they're doing, you know, games again. And it just,
and that's indoor venues, right? We don't even have fans in our open stadiums for the football season in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and NFL, it's like, I think they did it a weird way because some places have no fans, and then other places have nobody has full fans, but some places have no fans allowed, and then some places they actually allow fans. So it's like up to the team, I guess I would say. But the problem with the NBA, that thing that hurts the most for me, is that we saw what worked. Like, we saw the bubble worked. So why are you going away from it, from this, and benefit of it, unfortunately? And that's going to be a hard call. I do think that personally, this is just my opinion, not to get political on you, but I do think that government help should be in play for these situations to kind of, at least until we can shut it down, because we've seen the shutdowns, even in America. We had a shutdown for like a month or two. It was still too short, obviously. I mean, the facts bear that out now.
Yep.
But when that happened, the big phrase was flattening the curve. And, you know, and it worked. You know, it worked. If you shut things down, it worked. And I think that that is, I mean, when we see something that works, you should follow it. You shouldn't do something different to try and make minimal gains now. Because, yes, there is an economic benefit to it now. But it could have disastrous results long term, because what happens if things go too far and then you have to shut down and then people die? And then that's what you have to think about overall. With this, that's how serious this pandemic is. So
yeah, and that's why I'm really like this 2AW situation that really caught my attention, because when a company like 2AW is not able to trace the contacts, that really says something, because their crowds are tiny in comparison to Big Japan or to New Japan or to Noah. And if something like that happens to a bigger company, I think we're in some trouble for that.
And I feel like that's a very real possibility. What do you think about it? If things keep going up, like I said, 7 can turn into 100 pretty quickly. So who's to say that there wasn't somebody in that 2AW crowd that's also a New Japan fan that could go to a tag league show? And, you know, and then suddenly, like you said, suddenly however many there was at 2AW becomes however many there was at New Japan. And that's a big difference, as you mentioned. So you really have to think about that. And like you said, it's worrying and it's scary to think about. And I personally, I've always said this all along, that I feel like everything should be shut down, and sports events, I'm totally for them being played, but in the bubble scenario. And I think the same should apply for wrestling. You know, and I mean, I know that the empty arena wrestling sucks to a lot of people, and they don't like that. But to me, it's about being safe and having a good middle ground, you know, because we're obviously not having the big fans. And to me, I got to be honest, as a fan watching, the crowds they have now, not allowed to cheer and everything, isn't that much of an improvement to me. Like, I think you could get some real awkward sounds and stuff like that. Remember when they had the app on the phone for things in New Japan? That was worse than the no fans, actually.
To be quite honest, I do think that the talk about fan reactions is a bit overrated.
Yeah.
You know, it's it is how it is. We can't really change it right now, so we'll have to go with the flow.
And we still had great wrestling.
Right. It doesn't change.
Yeah, absolutely not.
So, yeah. Big Japan Pro Wrestling, they were at their end of a 14-show run in November with their all-best main event show from the Big Eden Arena in Osaka. And, you know, they had this big, big arena. They drew a bit over 1,000 fans. They had three rings set up in the arena. One ring with the no ropes barbed wire scenario and two regular rings. And even though they had this big arena, the fans still cramped in the first row. I guess they just bought first row tickets, and so they had the right to sit in the front row, but I don't really know why they didn't space it out a bit more. Man, I don't know about Big Japan and these situations.
It hasn't been the best run organization during this time. You know, like you said, this one is really strange because you would think that they didn't even have to do it this way. Like you said, they could easily spread them out. It's there's only, just over 1,000 fans, and it's under half of how big this could be. They have room. What's
yeah,
the problem?
New Japan had a show in Eden Arena, Osaka, a couple of weeks ago, actually, with Power Struggle. And they drew almost 3,000 fans, so Big Japan did a bit more than one-third of what New Japan did.
Hey, and there you go. You have plenty of room for these people, and like you said, maybe it was just they didn't even think about it that much at this point. I also think there is like a human psychological element to this, and that this has been going on for a while now, and I think some people are becoming numb to it, like kind of like, oh, if I haven't gotten it yet, like, you know, that sort of thing. And they're not even thinking about it as much as maybe they would have when it was at the start, you know, pretty much. And I think that is a kind of a deal. I think that could have just been carelessness that they didn't even think about that, or thoughtlessness maybe, even more than carelessness. Because there's no reason not to do it otherwise. And, you know, you think somebody would say, look, hey, maybe we could spread these guys out a little bit. But no, clearly that conversation didn't happen.
Clearly. So that show was a long one. It was almost 4 hours long. It was the tail end of Big Japan Pro Wrestling's 25th anniversary run, and they, of course, finished it out with the obvious match with Daisuke Sekimoto going to challenge for the Big Japan Strong World Heavyweight title against champion Yuji Okabayashi. We briefly talked about it in the DMs before we went to do this show, Dylan, and I said I'm going to have my soul food with Okabayashi and Daisuke Sekimoto. And basically, when you look at the match, it was a soul food highlight reel, wasn't it?
This was Thanksgiving in Japan, is what I call this main event match.
It was everything that Sekimoto and Okabayashi have been doing for years now, condensed into one match, basically.
Absolutely. I like that's exactly it. If you know these guys and know their style, if you're a fan of their style, the hard-hitting big guys who hit hard is basically their style, and also occasionally do big suplexes as well. If you like that style, this match is for you. But I actually thought this was better, because remember, they had a match last year.
Yeah.
That they attempted a very similar style match, but remember, that back then we thought it was kind of disappointing at the time, because I remember they had an Okabayashi and Daichi match, which we were like, man, that was way better than the Sekimoto match. Why? Like, what's the deal? And that was before Daichi, you know, he had a good year this year. In 2019, I was definitely a lot lower on him. I think most people were. So I remember that Sekimoto match from last year being disappointing. And this one, I thought, was a better match. And I enjoyed it for what it was. And I think it was needed again in this time. Needed on this show as well. It actually wasn't my favorite match on the show, but I still really enjoyed it personally.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. It just was a great match just to sit back and enjoy the action. No real complicated story where you had to follow any like limb being worked over and you had to follow the guy selling the leg or the arm or whatever. Just some two beefy guys working over each other. Actually, lots of great facial expressions too, and that's
yes.
how these Big Japan Strong style, in the cases of Sekimoto and Okabayashi, works too, because they of course have to sell each other's moves with these grunting facial expressions.
Oh yeah, and just making loud noises.
Yeah.
Like two bears going at it. You know, just every time they would hit each other, it would be like Dragon Ball Z almost, where you power up and you can hear Sekimoto go, "Ugh!" You know,
right,
pretty
and
much.
And in Dragon Ball Z, they would stretch for 30 minutes, and that would be one episode.
Yes, the original Dragon Ball Z, yes. That's how it would work, basically. That would be one episode, is the guy powering up. But
grunting.
Yes, we got the full match here. We got the full fight here. What would be 2 weeks of Dragon Ball Z in the old days is now only 22 minutes between these two. So, big to them. But also, I think we do have to mention and praise Sekimoto did try something a little different here with his big dive to the outside of this match.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah.
What was that about? Why didn't Okabayashi catch him?
Any dreams Okabayashi had, or maybe Okabayashi fans had, of him ever becoming a luchador, was dashed.
Not a good face.
No, he's a pure technico. He is the Watto of Big Japan when he was in Mexico. Obviously, much better overall as a worker, but the catching skills, it was bad. I mean, Sekimoto could have got hurt
away.
Bad. Yeah. Maybe it was planned to be that way.
I don't know. Sekimoto took a real nasty nosedive to the outside. That looked horrible.
Yeah, Sekimoto could have got hurt there, but thankfully, these guys, I think these two specifically, I look at them as pretty much the Men of Steel of Japanese pro wrestling. I remember a match where they had the tag titles on the line, and it was Sekimoto versus the Twin Towers, and Ishikawa ran at him. He ran at him and hit him running headbutt. It was the New Year's Day tag match.
Oh yeah, I remember that. And he split him open, right?
And he busted him open right away. It was like it was impossible for there to be a blade. It was like as soon as he sat up, there was huge amounts of blood. It was like Crimson Mask all over his face. And I just remember that being, and he got back up and won that freaking match, and it was freaking awesome. Like, because I remember he had won the title, the strong title, and I remember us talking about it, and I was like, man, Sekimoto again. And then I saw that match, and I was like, give him all the titles, pretty much, because I just thought that was so freaking badass. And these two, man, like you said, Sekimoto in this match took some punishment on that, mainly from himself, from that dive, but also just the back and forth between these guys, so intense, so hard-hitting. It's like, they're so believable. It's like, this is exactly how you know these guys would fight for real,
yeah.
You know, pretty much. So it's so believable, so intense, just so cool, man. I really enjoyed seeing this match. I think it was a great decision to have this match as the main event of this show, the 25th anniversary, because it really encapsulates what these two and their rivalry, as well as their team, are all about over the year. So I like that too. The story aspect of it was actually made this bump up a little bit, and I thought it made it even cooler.
Absolutely, it did. But you said that this was actually not your favorite match on the show, and I do have a feeling what your favorite match was, so please go on.
It has to be, of course, the Big Bunkhouse Death Match with the three rings and three super old people in that, and one of them especially being very broken down. But that was actually the semi-main event. We can talk about that as well.
But anyway, it was a fun death match, though.
It was. And Ishikawa, the young guy in, I always wonder, because I was watching this match and I was thinking, man, you see guys like Numazawa, Jun Kasai, Ryuji Ito, the Deathmatch Dragon. Those guys were the big guys when I first started watching 10 or 11 years ago on Japanese wrestling. And then Ito especially was so much younger than Kasai, obviously Black Angel, Numazawa. It's like those guys were so much younger than, and to see them now, it's like Ito especially, he is like so broken down.
I have
like,
no idea how he is still walking, though.
I mean, with all the crazy stuff he did, it's miraculous that he's even wrestling. But he's another one of these guys. He's just he must be one of these guys, and I'm speculating right now, but there are some wrestlers, it's like they love wrestling so much, and even in the deathmatch scene, I'm sure it might be even double for them, because they've sacrificed so much to this deathmatch way Mm-hmm. It's like that's what they love, and like that's what spurs him on. Because, like you said, it's a miracle this guy, you know, is even wrestling or even walking. You could say, but here he is in this bunkhouse death match, doing crazy stuff with syringes.
I guess you've seen the deathmatch episode of The Wrestler, the documentary where they follow Jun Kasai. So he's the same. He just loves it so much. He's 46 years old now, and they've been around for a long, long time. Kasai, 1998. Ruji Ito debuted in 1999. Sekimoto, by the way, too.
Yep.
They've been around for a long time. And then there is Yuki Ishikawa. And we've talked about Shunma Katsumata on one of our last shows being one of the hopes of the deathmatch division alongside Yuki Ishikawa and Drew Parker. There's not a lot of young talent there. There's Masaya Takahashi. But then Takayuki Ueki left Big Japan alongside Toshiyuki Sakuda. Sakuda now in Freedoms. And Takayuki Ueki showed up in All Japan, of all places.
Yes, in the opening match.
We're very weird, by the way. Even with Yusuke Okada and losing right away.
Of course he lost right away. I'm doing on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. I'm covering all these goofy tournaments we have going on, and I covered his match with you when Ueki was in All Japan, because I'm talking about the Real World Tag League. The Real World Tag League, of course. But yes, I noted Ueki in All Japan. We actually had a little bit of discussion, me and another guy, after the show. And I was like, look, this guy, if you look at Ueki's profile, he's small as in short, but he does have a little bit of size to him, too.
He does.
If they wanted to move him up. But the guy I was talking to was saying maybe he could be a junior guy in All Japan. But I think he profiles as more of a heavyweight long term if they want to go with him. But like you said, just him even being there is so weird. It's hard to even speculate. You know, it's just times are a change, and a lot of guys have moved this year. That's kind of an underrated thing in Big Japan and 01, I think, especially. It's like a lot of guys have left and bounced around, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we definitely have to talk about the Yuji Hino thing at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Writing that down. Right now. So, yeah.
But your point about Ishikawa was true, though. These guys are the hope. And actually, you know, we had another young guy in the death match that you wouldn't even expect. With Kamatani, the next strong title challenger, was in a barbed wire match on this show.
He pinned Leatherface.
Who is Leatherface now? I would love to know.
I don't really know. My guess is it's Tomohiko Hashimoto, but I'm not sure.
Who's Boogeyman?
Maybe that's Tomohiko Hashimoto, too.
They're both Tomohiko Hashimoto. Okay. That's Strigger's prediction. We'll see how that plays out. But yes, Kamatani got the win in a death match on the show, unbelievably. But yes, that shows you that the Big Japan, it just goes to show you that they're looking for that answer for the young deathmatch guy, wherever they can find, pretty much. But yes, Ishikawa is definitely the main one, because he started last year, and it turned out to be a pretty nice move when it came to him moving up the card, because he's already in semi-mains and stuff like that.
Oh, he did a main event recently with Isami Kodaka in Shinkiba First Ring in a scaffold deathmatch. So yeah, but there's no one in the deathmatch division left. So Kakuro Oshino is only doing these undercard matches. Abdullah Kobayashi is more of a comedic guy right now. There is no one left.
It's those two and the Ancients.
And Sami Kodaka and Yoko Miyamoto.
Yes, whenever they bring those guys in, yes, they can do death matches at any time they want. But it's just a weird scene right now. But I will say, like, that bunkhouse death match, as crazy as it is to see these guys, you know, Crazy Monkey, Jun Kasai, Deathmatch Dragon, Ryuji Ito, Black Angel, Jackie Numazawa. It's like these guys I was watching, and when I first saw them, I was like, these dudes are freaking crazy. Like, because the, you know, coming from American wrestling to deathmatch wrestling is quite a change, to say the least. unless you're a CZW fan, like you were, obviously. But I, you know, I really wasn't that into that. I was like, deathmatch wrestling, what? And then when I saw it in Japan, I was like, man, this is nuts, some of these guys. But I think that's actually an underrated gateway for a lot of people, too, to Japanese wrestling, is the deathmatch stuff. And, you know, like the wrestlers, the fans are intensely loyal to it and always want to defend it. So I think it's, I don't know what it is about deathmatch wrestling that inspires this passion, but I really do sense that from a lot of these guys, that it's like,
yeah. Like when you hear people talk about Danny Havoc, who passed away earlier this year, he was so passionate about it, too, and he really considered it a form of art. And I guess that's what drives a lot of these wrestlers to do these kinds of matches.
Yeah, and hopefully Ishikawa gets some. You know, I was a fan of his even before he became a deathmatch guy. I thought he was a good worker, and, you know, good young worker. I thought they had a great core with him, Hyodo, Kato, and he made the switch to deathmatch. And, you know, I think he's done a great job with it, and it's good to see them have somebody. But like you said, the problem is that so many guys have left that they need to find more guys, pretty much. So it's going to be interesting, you know, because not everybody's built for the deathmatch scene as well. I think that needs to be said. You know, not everybody can just show up and be like, I'm a deathmatch guy now.
You know, we saw, for example, Takayuki Ueki do the deathmatches.
Yep.
I remember that he had this one on January 4, a couple of years ago, with Ryuji Ito, and he passed out during the deathmatch. And we've, of course, talked about Orca Uto a lot on this show, too. Former Yoshihisa Uto, who...
Just call him Yoshihisa. Don't call him Orca Uto, please.
Still going by the name of Orca Uto, Dylan.
No.
I'm sorry.
Not on Eastern Lariat Wrestling on Twitch. I changed his name to Yoshihisa. I had to change it. I think the edit I found of him was as Orca Uto, but I changed it.
Yeah. Back to Yoshihisa. We saw this guy fail as a deathmatch wrestler right in front of our eyes.
Oh, yeah.
The fans laughed about him. And that shows how difficult it is to make it in the deathmatch scene.
Don't change your name to Orca either. If you become a deathmatch wrestler, that's my first piece of advice to any aspiring to deathmatch workers. But yeah, I mean, he main evented their biggest show, like Ueki did when he was around.
Yeah,
I think that he could be a prospect or could have been, but unfortunately. Oh,
no, man, there have been so many prospects in Big Japan, and it's really no use to talk about that subject. Yeah. but we were talking about the best match of the show, so...
Oh, yeah. The tag team title
yes,
match.
Yes, the tag title match.
Yeah. The Astronauts, Fuminori Abe and Takuya Nomura versus the Strong Hearts team, Lindemann and T-Hawk. Both of these teams would be in my list of best tag teams of the year. And I thought they proved it once again. And I thought this was a really strong match by any kind of standards you want. And like I said, I really enjoyed the main event for what it was. But this match really popped off for me. I absolutely love Lindemann in this match.
And this is one of those matches that pops off the card right away. And you really look forward to the match. And you like think about all the crazy stuff that they could do. And sometimes it just doesn't really like happen like you envision it. But this totally did.
Yeah. Like I was about to say, I was like, no, this is exactly how I thought it would go. And yeah, and this was a freaking great match. I have a lot of respect for all four of these guys. I think T-Hawk has had a really underrated year and been a great, great addition to everywhere he's been, whether it's DDT or Big Japan. Lindemann has impressed me so many times as well, but also the Astronauts. This was their year where they finally got the tag titles. They had that great title win. And a lot of people, like you said, the prospects, we were always like, are they ever going to get behind these guys? And then they finally gave them the tag team titles. And I thought that was for them and for any kind of young guy in Big Japan, that's a huge deal to get the titles. So to see them go on this great run and have a match like this, I was so happy to see it because it's like, man, all four of these guys, and none of them are old either. You know, I think T-Hawk's the oldest and he's about 30.
Yep.
So it's like these guys all have great futures ahead of them if they continue it. I absolutely love both of these guys. I think the Strong Hearts should be everywhere. You know, T-Hawk and Lindemann are just amazing workers. And the Astronauts, it's like they're guys that branch out a lot. And Abe, obviously, he started in Sportiva, of all things. Obviously, he's technically a Basara guy right now, but wrestles pretty much everywhere. And Nomura gets
doing
a lot of shine.
Everything. Abe is doing a lot of these underground shows that we don't even cover on Cage Match. He's doing a lot of these like shows with 12 fans in the audience or something like that. He's basically wrestling for any company in Tokyo that can get a hold of him.
This man just, to me, he has a case in a weird way as an MVP candidate. Of the year, because he wrestles in so many places. Like you said, he's literally everywhere. Everywhere you cover, you know, whether it's Basara, Big Japan, Dotonbori Pro, YPW on there, Real Japan, Dove Pro, 666. I'm looking at it right now. Total Triumph Team, even, Heat Up,
sure.
All Japan. I'm looking, like, this is just on his first page of Cage Match right now. I'm looking at lots of triple six in there. Land's End, he was on that show. Even Land's End. Listen, if anybody on Land's End is an MVP candidate in my book. At least deserve J Stage, he's on. Nico Pro. Gato Move, he was on
He's wrestled for 20 companies this year and also had some matches for companies that we consider freelance. Like, for example, he wrestled for on the Machida Pro Wrestling Festival in Bar 45. He wrestled.
Yeah.
He was on this show. This is a very underrated show, by the way. It's the it's basically a Sportiva show, but it was a freelance show. 8 Pride of Nagoya. It had all the former Sportiva guys that were trainees from Sportiva on that show, like Fuminori Abe, Shigehiro Irie, Koji Omoto, Toru Sugiura, Michio Kageyama, Shinya Ishida, Kengo Takai, Konaka Pale One. All these guys were on that show. So, yeah, he's doing everything.
Yeah, even Pro Wrestling Alive on that. How many promotions did we just list off on here?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, last year he wrestled for one more promotion. He wrestled for 21 promotions last year.
Wow. I mean, Abe is the man, and he's doing, and I bet he was great in all of them. He goes, he just is a wonderful wrestler. Very unique charisma to him, too. He's not just, like, I think that's the thing that separates him from his partner, who is also a great wrestler, but I think Abe is next level charisma. I actually think both of these teams are such a great matchup for each other, because I think Nomura and T-Hawk are a great comparison, and Lindemann and Abe match for each other. So I think this, I love this match. I thought, even on paper, like you said, it's like you have it in your head, and then it goes just as awesome as you want it to. And I thought it totally lived up to all my expectations.
It was just one of those tag matches that had these fluid motions all over the place, and everyone was hitting everything on point. Whenever one guy was out, the other was in. The finish was great with Abe and Nomura working together, and just an overall a great tag match. And you mentioned Lindemann. He's finally getting some shine too. He's the 01 junior champion now. He got this match here with his partner T-Hawk. So just some great stuff here, and I absolutely agree that this was the best match of the show.
It was just a great match in under 15 minutes too. Mm-hmm. So just a lot of fun stuff. I highly recommend to everybody track this match down and watch it, because I think you're going to love it. And I think a lot of people, these guys are known to a lot of people, but if you haven't watched them, check this out, because you're really going to fall in love with these four wrestlers.
Yeah. Another match that I liked on the show was another Strong Hearts match. Shima and Shigehiro Irie defeated Daichi Hashimoto and Yuya Aoki. Little shuffle between Hashimoto and Aoki early in the match. Put a lot of shine on Aoki in one of his first matches as a heavyweight. He worked with Irie very well, too. This match was 11 minutes. Then they had the junior title match, Tatsuhiko Yoshino against Andy Wu. Yoshino had defended the title for the first time on the tour in Hokkaido against his tag partner Kota Sekifuda. And then he went on to defend it against Andy Wu. This match was under 10 minutes, and I gotta say, I was disappointed by this.
Yeah, just quickly on the tag match. I didn't think that was as good as the tag title match, obviously, but it was a fine mid-card match. They totally did their job, and I think we talk about Big Japan. We have to give them credit in this one case, because I think they've done a great job with Aoki this year. And I think his step up to the heavyweights was completely logical.
Yes.
And now this is where the work is going to begin to not mess it up like they've done so many times. Because I think him as junior champion was a great revelation. And I've always been a fan of his. Even when I saw his first match when he came into Big Japan, he had the yellow tights. And I thought, man, this guy, he can be something. And he's proving it this year. I think he's been one of their strongest overall wrestlers, actually, even compared to the guys like you would think, like Kobayashi, Nomura, Sekimoto. Like he has been up there with all of those names, in my opinion, and been somebody that has been a great piece that they've kind of risen up to be a player in Big Japan. And I think his elevation to heavyweight was really smart. He's done all he could do in the junior scene, and now he's back here. Obviously, he's still on the lower end of the heavyweights, loss here. But hopefully they could do something with him and not mess that up. That was my main takeaway from that match. The junior title match, I thought it was pretty all right. But like you said, for a big match like this, Andy Wu, what has he been doing this year pretty much? Like, this is one of his biggest spotlight matches. So I really wanted him to come out. And I had Yoshino, again, just won the title. He's somebody that I have a lot of, a lot of respect for, a lot of his guts world work back in the day. So I was really excited when he got the title. But this wasn't a standout match, I would say, definitely on this show. Definitely a lower tier. I'd probably say this is like the fifth or sixth best match on the show, to be honest.
Yeah, but with Aoki moving up to heavyweights, they now have to reshuffle the deck for the juniors, and they are trying. Yoshino obviously now has stepped up from being a comedy wrestler to being a serious wrestler, and he's asking for more prominent positions. And on that first defense of the title, he was not in the main event. He was in the semi-main of the show, and the main event was a death match. So he was asking why the title match was not in the main, and that is his goal, to make the junior division bigger in Big Japan, which is obviously a very big goal.
Yeah, that's a tough task.
Very
ambitious. I will say that it's kind of good that he's basically gone like bam, bam, bam with title matches.
Yeah,
he had the win last month, then immediately challenged, defended against Sekifuda, and then on this show had the Andy Wu match. So I do like that he's having a decent amount in his first month, and it shows that he's at least active and caring about the title. So I know it sounds kind of crazy to say, oh, he wants bigger spots and wants to elevate the junior division. But I think that's a good thing to say. It is at least a good start.
It is. And,
he's a good worker.
He is. Then they've brought Andy Wu in as someone for the junior division. And they've, of course, also elevated Kota Sekifuda to a position where he scores a lot of pinfalls recently. So at least on that level, they're doing good work.
Yeah, and I'm not throwing in the towel. I just think this one could have been better. It was under 10 minutes, too. Under 10 minutes, too, as well. So it clearly wasn't a big focus on this show. But I agree with you that it wasn't what it could have been. But still, I thought it was a decent mid-card match. It wasn't anything to write home about. But if you watch it, I don't think you'll hate yourself. It was like a solid 6 out of 10 level match to me or something like that.
The scaffold death match, Dylan. I really don't really want to talk about that except for the giant dive by Drew Parker in that match. That was crazy. The moonsault off the scaffold by Yuko Miyamoto was crazy too, because it was very close to the turnbuckle. But, dude, the Minoru Fujita title reign, they have to end this now. I'm happy for the guy. He gets to do what he wants to do. The thing is that him and Isami Kodaka have this idea that the Samson clutch is a finish now, right?
Yeah.
And I called it when they announced that Minoru Fujita would defend the deathmatch title against Isami Kodaka. I called the finish is going to be a Samson clutch, because these guys, for whatever reason, they really love the Samson clutch. Problem, though, is Minoru Fujita can't do the Samson clutch properly. He fucked it up 2 times. He fucked it up when he won the title from Ruji Ito, and he fucked it up against Isami Kodaka. And in the Ruji Ito case, you could, of course, say, Ito is broken down, but Isami Kodaka, he's not really broken down. So
he's been around for a while, but I would say he's broken down. Yeah.
So Minoru Fujita, his deathmatch title reign is not really going that well, in my opinion. But it's a thing they want to do with him. He's been a homegrown talent. We talked about that. Debuted in Big Japan in 97. Around for a long, long time now. So I guess they are going with it for a while. I'm going to switch it to who else is there. Takumi Tsukamoto is challenging on January 2nd. Maybe he gets a run with the title, even though he's the Union Pro champion in Basara now. Who knows? But Minoru Fujita, definitely not the biggest or the greatest name to hold the deathmatch title.
He needs to bring back the Sasuke segue as his finisher, in my opinion, which is kind of like a Northern Lights bomb kind of deal, like Scoop Brainbuster, like kind of move. That would have been perfect, like for him in this division as well. I thought this whole setup with the scaffold was kind of like weird, to be honest, like how they did it. Guys were hanging off of things. You had the big dive, like it was like a swanton bomb almost from Drew Parker. Miyamoto's moonsault. It's like, I think the scaffold deal is something that would have been cool before. And it kind of brings me back, because remember, they used to have a similar match in Big Japan, but they had the barbed wire under under the scaffold. It was like a net. Yep. Yeah, the circus net death match. And this was kind of like that, but with no net. So I think they automatically lose points for that. But yeah, Fujita as champion, yeah. The thing is, he was always like the like when I first started watching, he was like the underachiever of pro res, pretty much. It's like he was gonna be a big star, like especially in 01 when 01 was still kind of big, and he was gonna be like one of their top guys, and it just never panned out, and he kind of went in these like the sleaziest indie direction possible with his career, with all kinds of stuff going on. Obviously Tokyo Gurentai, he's kind of like. Whenever you think of Tokyo Gurentai, his face pops up in most people's head, I would think. Along with Nosawa, perhaps. But he's a really sleazy, grimy indie worker at this point. And I think that's all he really is. Like you said, I think it would be better if they moved the title to somebody younger, maybe more dynamic, to say the least. He got it. His win was a big moment. I think it was worth it, but I agree with you. I think it should be somebody else.
Yeah, the rest of the card was a lot of undercard stuff. You mentioned the No Ropes Barbed Wire match. It was labeled Indie Dreams with the Big Japan team of Abdullah Kobayashi, Yoshi Kamitani, Kankuro Hoshino, and Yuichi Taniguchi going against the supposed FMW team of Boogeyman, Leatherface, Gosaku, Goshugawara, who looks horrible, by the way. Man, this guy's old.
They all look horrible.
and Raijin Yaguchi. Yaguchi doesn't really have anything without Onita.
Was this really a dream match? What would you say?
No.
that's a real stretch, I would say.
Yeah, it was a match. It was basically there to put over Kamitani. It's weird, though, that he's been put over in a death match and now challenges for the strong title coming out of that.
Do you think he's going to jump to a death match? After that title challenge,
I do think there is a chance that he actually does it, because obviously there is no way for him to ever be anything in the strong division anymore. But there is room for a younger guy in the death matches.
He could be the champion if he goes to death match. You know, like there's no reason he can't be the death match champion if he were to go that route. And like you said, a strong champion. That's just not going to happen.
The thing, though, is he's kind of dipping his feet into it. He's not really doing like these hard death matches. He's doing more of the hardcore matches. And that's different.
I don't know if
he really wants to do the blading with all the light tubes and whatever they do, the syringes.
Yeah, like I said, not everybody can be a death match.
No.
I think maybe he'll be like the fill-in guy for whenever they need like mid-card matches. They could do that with multiple people. Like just have him do kind of like light death matches, like kind of like this with Kamitani. I think that might be their only option if they want to keep doing multiple death matches on the show. Either that or bring in a bunch of new guys. But they don't have the money to just bring in all these death match guys over and over. So they might have to, you know, get creative a little bit with some of their undercard death matches.
They should. There was a six-man tag that only lasted 3 minutes. Koei Sato, Quiet Storm. Why do they bring in Koei Sato for a three-minute match?
That's a great question. That's a wonderful question.
Man. Okay. Why do they bring in Quiet Storm for a three-minute match?
Why'd they do this match at all?
Why didn't they just put in Hashimoto and Kosuke Sako here in the match and didn't book Koei Sato and Quiet Storm as outsiders who probably got a lot of money for that?
Listen, you need the star power. This is the anniversary show. They're throwing out bones to people right now. There, you know, Sato really hasn't done a lot since he left 01. To be honest,
yeah, that's a great question too, right? He left 01, and so what?
Yeah, he's doing 3 minute matches now in Big Japan. I don't know. Maybe he's like he is a little older. He's 43 at this point. He's been around for a while. Maybe he's trying to wind down a little bit. I wonder if that's not part of it for him, because you'd think he's somebody for me. He's somebody that could do a lot more if they wanted him. I mean, earlier this year he had the team with Sakamoto, and they did a good job. So why are we doing this 3 minute matches?
They are now having the Twin Towers once again. They are challenging for the Big Japan Tag Team title coming up on December 12th. So we'll see about that, how that goes. Yep. But the match, Quiet Storm, Koe Sato, Ryota Hama defeated Akira Yodo, Takao Kato, and Yasufumi Nakanoe. 3 minutes. And the opening match really was my jam because I got to see Gaina and Hub in Big Japan Pro Wrestling, the Osaka locals, of course, the local heroes there. Osaka Pro Wrestling was brought up. They defeated the team of Katsumi Kikuta and Ryuichi Kawakami with the big splash that Hub does, and really athletic version of it, off the shoulders of Gaina. So cool opening match.
This was a great opener. Like, legit, this was one of my favorite matches on the show.
Yep.
I would put it below the two big matches, but I would put this above everything else on the undercard. You know, like, besides the tag title match and the strong title match, I think this was, like, my third favorite match. I thought this was a really good opener. I love the team of Gaina and Hub. I think they're, like, this is a perfect role for them, too. In Big Japan, Hub has a little bit more power in 0-1 and is always, like, a junior title division. And why can't he challenge for, like, him and Yoshino would be a really good match. Gaina, the big guy, the fat guy, he can do flying stuff too. Like, he is a great opening match guy. Kawakami, we always talk about how much we like him. Kikuta has improved. I'm becoming a Kikuta believer. After that, remember what he did in the Strong Climb, and we thought he had some good matches there. Him and Jake Lee had a really good performance. Kikuta, I'm coming around. You date, yeah, dating dating Toyota. Dating Toyota changed him. I think. It's like when Yoshihashi, you know, married Ayumi. It's like everything changed for him. Like, the same thing we're seeing with Kikuta. He's rising up, because I thought this was a really good match. And I was thinking, like, Kawakami, I think we should do an episode someday where we, like, move people around from companies. Because Kawakami would be one of my top draft picks, because he needs to be somebody to, that is way above opening match level, in my opinion, in Big Japan. But unfortunately, he's one of the faces of, like, potential guys who Big Japan wasted. He's right near the top of that list.
Him and Katsumi Kikuta, they are the Niigata Pro Tag Team Champions. At least they have the belts around their waist, right?
They did. The Honorable Niigata Pro Tag Team
Champions. Oh, was it? No, yeah. It's a tag title, right? Yeah.
He was the Openweight Champion at one point.
Kawakami. He was too. Yeah.
Yeah. The Niigata Pro represent right now, the former Openweight Champion of Niigata Pro out here. Only the opener. Put some respect on that title, Striga.
Right.
Champions like him should be in the opening match. Move him to another company and let him shine, because I think he can. And Hub, like, I was thinking about this. To me, I've always said that Hub has always been one of my favorite junior heavyweights. I think he's super underrated, and this was another performance of that. I was thinking about it. He would be in my top 15 juniors in New Japan, like top 10, top 15. If you were in first, second, and third team, he'd be up there, like, on my list. I think he's really good, and somebody that deserves a lot of credit and respect for what he done. I know it's just 0-1, but he's had a lot of good matches.
He's been main eventing big shows in Osaka Pro Wrestling with thousands in attendance before.
Oh, yes, exactly. And he's had a million gimmicks over the years. He's one of these guys, just like Sugi-san in 0-1. Like, he's another one of those guys of that era. I think I have a disposition towards liking guys like that, that came up in that era and had a million gimmicks. And he is right near the top of that list with Sugi. So I as a wrestler, even in 2020, I really enjoy watching him work. And I think he's somebody that's right up there to this day as one of the top junior heavyweights in the country.
He really is, and I'd like to see him around more. You mentioned Gaina too. These two are really they're wrestling as a tag team. They're wrestling against one another. They're really good friends.
They had a 30-minute match last month on Hub's produce show.
Right. Yeah, so this was the Big Japan show from Edin Arena. They have a card for Death Mania 7 2020 on... I think I have the date wrong on Pearl of. I think it's on December 10. The card reads the following. Ryuichi Kawakami and Katsumi Kikuta once again in the opening match against Katsuki Hashimoto and Masaki Morihiro. Hashimoto, one of those guys we need to move around to.
Yes.
Daichi Hashimoto and Michio Kageyama, a Nagoya original, go against Akira Yodo and Takuo Kato. And there is a death match, Ryuji Ito, Abdullah Kobayashi, and Yaki Nuwasawa against Kankuro Hoshino, Drew Parker, and Yuki Ishikawa. The Strong Hearts return. Shima, Tiok, and the Linderman face Yui Aoki, Kota Sekifuda, and Kosuke Sato. Well, by the way, the junior title. Did you see how Isami Kodaka presented the title to Tatsuhiko Yoshino and took a long look at the junior title?
The title's moving up.
What Kodaka. Is that all about? Why did Kodaka come to the ring?
Listen, Kodaka, he's a big name. He's been a main eventer for years in Japan in the deathmatch division, and he can wrestle normal matches as well. He's a Basara guy. He does what he wants. Don't tell Isami Kodaka what he can and can't do. He wants that junior title, Striga. Maybe. He needs more titles. That could be the top Basara title.
Is he actually going for that title? Let's see. It's the final box office of Big Japan in the year. He's actually challenging for the title.
Really?
Yes! Oh. I'm just seeing that on the card. December 30. Tatsuhiko Yoshino versus Isami Kodaka. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Like, there you go. Listen, Yoshino wanted the title to take a step forward, and now he gets a big star to challenge it. So I think it's a great idea, personally. Even though it does seem like, why would he want the title? But, you know, it's fine. It makes it look that much more important. Should be a good match.
Should be a good match, right. So, moving on. Daisuke Sekimoto, Yasufumi Nakanoe. They team against... This one is a thing now. It's either the Brahman Brothers or Takuya Nomura and Fuminori Abe based on who wins the Big Japan Tag Team title match between the Astronauts and the Brahman Brothers. Well, actually... on the day this show is released, so we'll have to see about that. It's on Sunday, November 29. Then we have the Big Japan Tag Team title match, as I said. Astronauts are the Brahman Brothers going against Koe Sato and Shuji Ishikawa, Twin Towers, reuniting. For the strong title, it's Okabayashi and Hideyoshi Kamitani. And for the deathmatch title, Minoru Fujita against Yuko Miyamoto. If it was up to me, Miyamoto would win the title.
Maybe him and Kodaka could be double champions in Big Japan by the end of the year. Just to back up a little bit, isn't it interesting that Ishikawa is going to all these different places? He was at DDT last month, and now he's making a full wrestling appearance in Big Japan this month as well. And obviously his work in All Japan is known. I think that's interesting because he's been so deep in All Japan these last couple of years, and now he's branching out a little bit more.
I guess he's not going to Big Japan to sing.
No, this would be a little different appearance than his DDT one, but it'll be hard to top that one, that DDT appearance, because that was like one of the best parts of that whole show. But and this could be the best part of the whole show, too, if it's the Astronauts against him as well. But Okabayashi and Kamitani, that could be a good match. Even though the problem with it is just what you said earlier. Everybody knows Kamitani is not going to win the title, so that kind of drags it down a little. The main event, Miyamoto would be a fine champion. I think that Fujita will probably win, but I'm with you. If Miyamoto would win, they would do that. I think they might have something else in mind for the title eventually, but Miyamoto would be a great champion too, so I have no issue with that if that happens. It should be an alright show. It'll be hard to top this last one, though, because I really enjoyed this last show that we talked about, the Osaka show. That'll be a tough show to top, in my opinion.
I got the date right, by the way. It's December 20. And 10 days later, there's the final Kuroken Hall show of the year where Yoshino versus Isami Kodaka happens, and there's going to be a tag title match too. No challengers announced yet, but definitely a tag title match. Strong title, January 2nd, as I said. Minoru Fujita probably going against, Takumi Tsukamoto. That's the way I want to say it.
Oh, I thought you said the strong title. I thought you said Fujita was going to face Okabayashi. double champion from Minoru Fujita.
Let's move over to Pro Wrestling Noah for now. They had their big show in the Yokohama Budokan this past Sunday, November 22nd. And first of all, the arena, Dylan, looked great, right?
Oh, absolutely. This was in Yokohama. Really good production values we're seeing in NOAH in general, I think, right now, and that's a big step up. I think ever since about a year ago at this time, when they had the big Sumo Hall show, I think the production in general has taken a big step up for NOAH. That's something they've improved on.
Yeah, you could see it in all the highlight videos that they did, especially the one for the main event that was so great, and they put over the rivalry between Goshi Ozaki and Katsuki Nakajima so much more. Again, production values, they really matter. And it's great to see that Noah benefits from that. And one thing that they did that they really hammered home, they hammered it home both on their regular broadcast as well as on their social media, is that they had an English broadcasting team ringside. One of those is Mark Pickering, and I've known Mark through Twitter for years now.
Yeah.
Traveling the world for the World Judo Federation, and now he got this gig here for Pro Wrestling Noah to announce the show, to be a commentator for the show. Mark, I know he's been in Japan for quite some trips now. He has actually trained. He told me that he's actually trained with Satoru Sayama in the past in the Real Japan Dojo. So he has been around Japanese wrestling for a long time. So he has a connection with it. I've not listened to the English broadcast, I gotta say, because, well, it was $20 and the Abima airing was for free. So... not a good deal for me, at least. So I did not listen to that. But they are returning for the December 6th broadcast, so I guess they did a good job.
Yeah, shout out to Mark. He's somebody I've talked to on Twitter now and then. I don't know him too personally, but he seemed like a really good guy, very knowledgeable guy. So hopefully he did a good job as well on there. And good for him that he gets this gig. Good for Noah to have an English presence on their commentary team. So I think that's really cool in and of itself. Hopefully they can get it over to the Wrestle Universe side or the Abima side in the future. So, you know, it'll be a little bit easier, much like the other companies, how New Japan has it on their streaming service. You know, you gotta keep up with the Joneses sometimes when it comes to this Japanese pro wrestling game. So, yeah, if they do that, I'm with you. I think it should be some good stuff. But shout out to Mark for doing that. Yeah. Getting that gig.
As an American, Dylan, what do you think about the Fight Alliance that Noah now has? They've now done two shows on Fight. One was the standalone show with Sonny Ono on commentary. This one now had a new broadcasting team, and they're bringing that broadcasting team back. Obviously, Fight considers this to be an asset for them.
I think Noah's had always had a good... like presence, you know, relatively speaking, among Japanese wrestling companies, even when it was the down era and before, you know, New Japan really blew up. I think the Noah name meant something to a lot of the fans of, especially like Ring of Honor. They had that connection. I think a lot of people know Noah from that. Mm-hmm. They were on TV in Europe and England and Canada. You know, they had TV deals there. So it's like they've always had a little bit of a presence there. So I think it's a good thing that they're getting back up to that state now, because for a lot, you know, a lot of these past decade, especially in the last few years, I think after Kenta left especially, it was kind of hard to get that big extra bump. You know, the closest they had was when New Japan worked with them, and that was like really bad publicity, if anything, because the shows were bad at the end of the day, because, you know, because we know how that went with the Suzuki-Gun invasion. But now they're getting in and they're making positive gains. And I'm happy to see this team coming back. You know, definitely, you know, I know the first team with Sonny Ono got a lot of negative reviews and things like that. So hopefully this new team with Mark can do some good things. And I think it's a great thing that they have that alliance. I think, again, with things going how they are, especially you have to keep in mind, too, with the pandemic going on, sometimes even if somebody would have been more interested in that in the past or a Fight broadcast in the past, might not have that extra cash rolling around right now. So hopefully they can get it done to where they either lower the price or have it on the Wrestle Universe. Again, much like New Japan, I think if they want to compete with New Japan among English speakers, that's going to be how it has to go at the end of the day.
Yeah, pretty much, I think too. Yeah. So let's get into the show, Dylan. This one was a long one too, but in my opinion, a show... it was better than the Big Japan show, definitely, and it was a really, really good and an important show for Pro Wrestling Noah to deliver home for their fans and to show free on Abima TV, because I think it really transmitted the essence that Pro Wrestling Noah is now. And it started out with their young talent in the first match, with an eight-man tag match. Mohamed Yoneim, Hajime Ohara, Yohei, and Seki Yoshioka. That was a weird team, by the way, but I liked how Full Throttle posed with Mohamed Yono in the disco post that he did. They defeated the young team of Yoshiki Nomura, Yuta Miyawaki, Kinya Okada, and Yasutaka Yano. We've talked about these young talent before. I think it's a bit weird, though, that Yoshiki Nomura has gone back to being a rookie now and shaved off his mohawk after he had joined Kongo. But that's how it is. Was a good match.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting when you look at the show. You kind of touched on the start of it. This show was actually ranked number one on the martial arts section of Abima when it came to their rankings. And I know a lot of people watched this live in Japan, especially, I think. So it got good, you know, a lot of viewers, and that's really great for the company. And we'll get to the main event to talk about that a little bit. But this opener, yeah, it was just a funny opener with Full Throttle and Yone doing comedy. But the youngsters all looked pretty good. I'm always a big fan of seeing Inamura wrestle, and I think Okada has a lot. And this Yano, he looks like it's still too early to call for him, but he's looked solid so far in his first couple of appearances.
Yes, Pro Wrestling Noah, they actually ran a public training session, a public search for new trainees in Kawasaki this weekend. And they have three new guys that they've scouted through this session. There was 16 people at the training session, at the trainee audition, I gotta say. And Pro Wrestling Noah, they really pointed out that there were all kinds of people from all different aspects of life that applied for this training, from all different jobs, between the age of 17 and 29. 16 people passed the early screening, and three of them got, adopted to the Noah Dojo. The names are Yosuke Sasaki. He is 17, has a background in baseball and judo. Haruto Ogawa, also 17, rhythmic gymnastics. And Ari Najima, 20 years old, a background in amateur wrestling. So three new trainees right away.
Absolutely. More great things for Noah. Definitely doing a really good job over the years of bringing in fresh talent, new talent. And I think the production values and the new wrestlers are really helping them improve their stock. And, you know, that's why you can see the big viewers that they have now that they might not have had in the past, even though I felt like they were on the way. Abima's done, Abima TV deal does some good things for them. Mm. And I want to mention one more thing aesthetically about the show. I think we definitely have to mention, and that is the green in the ring that they had there.
Yeah.
Yeah, for this. They brought the green back. It wasn't the same. It wasn't the old style, but they had the green outlining pretty much on the ring.
It was basically the frame of the canvas.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like, yeah, the frame of the canvas was green, and the middle had their normal style pretty much there. So I think it's good to bring the green back as much as possible. That gives a good feeling to the classic fans. Maybe if you're a fan of Noah from the old days, that's a good thing. So I really appreciated that too, to have the green kind of deal on the ring. Hopefully they can keep that for the big shows at least.
So I was DMing with Mark after the show, and he was showing me his list of names that he had put together for the ex, for the partner that Kotaro Suzuki had, and he had all the names listed that I had. I would have listed two, probably. Like, he had Koji Kanemoto, Minoru Tanaka, he even listed Ricky Marvin, and I would have named Ricky Marvin too.
Yeah, me too.
But then it turned out to be Salvaje de Oriente, Dylan. And as it turns out, a user on Twitter has found out that Salvaje de Oriente is none other than Freedom's Yuya Susumu.
So first of all, because there's a lot to unpack with the Salvaje de Oriente. Nobody knew who this was when he came out.
What do you think about debuting an unknown wrestler, and then it's a masked guy that nobody knows who it is? What do you think about that?
I think that's not a good idea, to be honest with you. It would have been much better if it had been a known guy. Like any of those guys you just said would have been a much better. And those were the guys I was thinking. I was thinking he was either going to be Tanaka or Ricky Marvin, to be honest with you. Like, those would have been my top two names. So when you see this guy come out, a guy that nobody knows, right? Like a brand new character. I just thought it was so goofy. It's such a flat way to do this match, in my opinion.
I do have conflicting thoughts about that, because I agree that in the current day and age, it's not a good idea to like debut a character like this in the age of wrestling, where basically everyone can like search on the internet who the guy is. Then again, in the traditional wrestling sense, debuting a masked character or an unknown character has been a thing in wrestling forever. And the way that Mark told me about it is that backstage, they looked at his list and they just smiled mildly. And so he figured it would be one of those guys on the list. So he was kayfabed, even though he was on the commentary team for the English side on Fight. I gotta love that.
Not surprising they would try to trick the foreigner, to be honest. We should try. I would love to talk to Mark more about his stuff.
Yeah, we
that
should.
He doesn't
we
know
definitely
it.
Should.
Yeah, yeah. Mark's a good guy, and I'm happy that he has this gig. But I have to say, this Twitter user, what was his at? Do you know his handle?
Oh,
we need to give this guy some props. Because this...
Yes.
You find it, I'll talk. Basically, this guy deserves so much props for his... crazy attention to detail here of Yuya Susumu, like Dragon Joker. Okay, like this guy is as an indie wrestler as you could find, and this user on Twitter, and I think we were the first ones to kind of like retweet that out, and that got a lot of retweets and stuff. A lot of people found that, but just crazy stuff that this guy is such a dedicated fan. Like amazing investigative work by him to go, because basically the way he found it was because of a birthmark on Salvaje de Oriente, and it's like, oh, Susumu also has this birthmark as well,
and also the same finish.
Yeah, and the same finish as well. But basically, 99.9% of people would have had no idea. Like that was even a thing, and you know, and somehow give that guy a lot of credit. Did you find him yet?
Yes, the at is at NapponXXX, NAPP0NX_X_X.
Wonderful work, Napon. X_XX. But like seriously though, like that was some crazy stuff. That was an amazing job on his part, so I really got to give him huge thanks and shout outs there. But your point also is that he has connections to Noah too that you wouldn't have thought of,
right? So Hayata is in Pro Wrestling Noah obviously now, and Seki Yoshioka too, and both of them have been trained under Hanzo in WrestleGate, and so has Yuya Susumu. So now the WrestleGate trio is back together in Pro Wrestling Noah, which is very interesting. And if they were going in the direction that maybe Salvaje Oriente unmasks at some point, they could reform the team of Hayata and Seki Yoshioka they had in WrestleGate. So that is very interesting, that I thought.
Yeah,
Scramble Talk was the name of the tag team. Yes.
Yeah. So great stuff to bring him in, and he's a good worker. I've seen him now and then. I haven't seen him in a while, but I've seen him before wrestling. He was a good junior heavyweight worker in the past. I think he's somebody that is worth bringing in and giving a shot to here. I just think I'm not a big fan of the way they debuted him, because like literally the 100% of the reaction was like, who nobody knows this? Who is this guy? Like, so I think that like that's a totally bad reaction for your first appearance. And like that stuff with the birthmark was so unexpected that I kind of saved him in a lot of ways. I have to give credit to Napon. I think he might have given Salvaje de Oriente new life based on this. But they did get the win here over the losers Congo, as always.
They defeated the team of Tadasuke and Hao. Well.
What else is new?
What else is new, right?
Yeah. Tadasuke, it's always good to see Tadasuke lose, though, so it's okay.
How's run in Noah has flattened so quickly, right? And Neo 2.
Good worker, but they like you said, it's flat. He had like a standout match in July versus Keno.
Yep.
So I think it's clear he's got kind of a grassroots fan base. Like, even though he's not pushed, everybody knows he's good. So I think that will give him kind of like O'Hara, though.
His junior title match was very good, too.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good worker. Like, so him and O'Hara, I think, are kind of in similar spots where everybody knows they're good. They just don't get a rub for whatever reason. And by whoever's, well, we know who's booking this. like, but he just doesn't get the rub from him for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's Congo for you, basically. Yeah.
Not just for me, just in life.
On the topic of Congo.
Yeah, let's talk about Civil War.
They lost again in the next match. Manabu Soya, Masaki Tamiya, and Neo lost to Katsuyuki Fujita, Kendo Kashin, and Nosawa Rongai, and Kendo Kashin with a World Japan tattoo on his chest.
What was that? What was that?
I don't know. World Japan. It's a company that has been defunct for over 15 years now.
Yeah, like, why would you even bring that up in 2020 to get a tattoo of this? That's what I really don't understand.
Dude, right. In All Japan, they are playing the ECW theme for Masato Tanaka and Tajiri.
That is true. I mean, I'm again, patreon.com/EasternLariat. I've ranted about Team ECW in All Japan. But listen, maybe Kashin has some loyalty. Maybe this is a sign. This is a tribute to Riki Choshu.
Maybe.
And he's on the staff of the Gleet parent company, right?
Yep.
Yeah, see? So this is all a big tribute. This is all a big tribute to representing Gleet, Great, whatever you want to call it. whatever that stupid-ass company name is. Although they had a really good first show, and they followed it up by doing nothing for multiple months. But whatever you call him, he is tributing that company right now with this. But regardless, I don't know about about him, and I don't know about Congo, and I don't know about this undercard, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the next match was really stupid and dumb.
Let's get into it.
Keiji Muto defeated Shuhei Taniguchi. There is no way that you can tell me that if 57-year-old guy with two artificial knee joints is able to overpower a 44-year-old man that weighs 231 pounds. There is just no fucking way. But they did it here.
They've defied reality, I guess, with this match. This sucked. there's no real other nice way to say it. This just totally sucked.
How?
I don't know.
Muto overpowered Taniguchi on the mat. Why?
Here's the real reason why. It doesn't matter if Taniguchi loses to anybody. Like, they didn't even care about that. I bet. But your point is completely right. It's totally unrealistic that Muto should be beating anybody in Noah, in my opinion. And unfortunately, they banked upon him being some kind of star. I don't know what metrics they have to support this case, or if it's any kind of true fact, but it's something that they clearly believe in. Why it's happening, I don't know. But it feels like we are headed down the unfortunate road of him getting a world title shot.
We are.
I thought this match sucked. That's the problem with these matches. Like him
it was
and
a bad match.
Yeah. Like him and Kaito wasn't a good match, and this was arguably even worse. So like I don't know why they keep doing that. It adds nothing to these shows in my opinion. But I guess in the end, the proof will be in the pudding. If somehow he gets a title, you know, in the title match, he does a great number and everything blows up and they have a million viewers on Abima, I guess we'll all have been wrong. But to this point and to everything we know, I don't think it's worth it at all to bring him to win. And I don't think he should be beating anybody. The Kaito loss was much more offensive to me because he obviously has much more potential than Shuhei, even though I'm a huge fan of Taniguchi as a wrestler. I think he's kind of underrated because of all the stuff with Maybach. But he's a good worker, deserves better, but unfortunately this is his lot in life.
Listen, loved how everybody was expecting that Kiyomiya was winning the national title and then Muto would challenge Kiyomiya, because Kaito, of course, needs his win back. But until proven wrong, I will not believe that Keiji Muto is giving any win back to any wrestler in Noah.
Could he win the title?
Yeah, of course.
I think that would be a huge mistake.
I know, but we've talked about that.
I know, you're right.
Yeah. On to more puzzling things.
Yeah, even more crazy booking. You were saying that I was really, when you said at the start of the show this was a better show than the Big Japan show, I really had to stop and think about it. I mean, like, the last couple of matches really delivered, and this show's about to turn around.
Yeah.
But up to this point, I was like, dude, this show sucked.
That is true, but I think this show had higher heights than the Big Japan show had.
Yeah, let's save that for the main event. Stuff. We'll wrap up the full show. We'll have a full vision. But yes, let's get to this stupid title change. A total waste of an angle that they spent a year's building and blew it off in 1 month.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yes. So Momo no Station Tag, they lost the titles to Ogawa and Hayata. First of all, Hayata sucks. Like, Hayata and Yohei are terrible, terrible pro wrestlers. And I'm so sick of watching them on these shows. I try to be nice to them. I always try to say, oh, they have a place, they have charisma, they have this, that, and the other. Hayata sucks, dude. Like, he should not be a champion in Noah. Yohei is in a perfect spot for him. Teaming in the opening matches, and that's where Hayata belongs. Or teaming with Tadasuke in Congo and losing all his matches. Him as champion is just goofy. Ogawa's a great worker. But for a 54-year-old guy to ruin, like, not, it's not his fault, but because he did good in this match. He was a good worker in this match. But to kill this angle for Momo no Seishun Tag a month later, it makes no logical sense. Why even do that angle then if you were going to do that? I don't care who it is. I'm a big fan of Harada and Kodige, but even if they were the worst workers ever, this is just illogical, like, the way they book it. I just nonsense, I feel like. And on top of that, it's like, the hamster wheel keeps moving in the junior division, because now we've had another shakeup that means nothing, and these guys are going to wrestle each other all over again.
It's an absolute mess. Nothing makes sense. Nothing. And what do Ogawa and Hayata have in common?
Absolutely nothing.
Not even their attire. They're Stinger. No. What displays that they're a Stinger? At least Congo, they have red.
That's true.
They have a color. But Hayata and Ogawa, they have nothing.
They had a great thing going with Stinger at first when they had the veterans. Suzuki, Tanaka, and Ogawa. Yeah. Great team. And then they turned Kodige, and that was fine too. You know, Ridgeway, those guys don't really fit the aesthetic, but they all worked together, and it was a great team. This version of Stinger is like the dying days of... It's like kind of like maybe... a band that was once great, but
the NWO Silver.
Yes, this is the NWO Silver version of Stinger right now, because they were once great, and this version with Hayata is just so stupid. And like you said, they don't fit together at all. I completely disagree with this title change, and I don't even like them as champions. Again, like what you said is totally true. Hayata and Ogawa have nothing in common. They're not a good team. Even in the match, they don't really work that well together. And why would you want to work well with Hayata? So I can't blame Ogawa for this. I just think that, the match overall was okay. It wasn't a bad match. Yeah, it was a fine. It was a fine match. But I'm so sick of seeing Hayata get titles, and this team is just mind-boggling of the Stinger version and to win the title. I cannot say that it left a good taste in my mouth at all. In fact, it really turned me off. And I'm with you. This junior division is terrible. Like, and they have a lot of great talent, but they've just ran this whole division into the ground, and they're going to really have to work hard in 2021 to drag it out, because I can't remember any time during any era of Noah that it was worse than it is right now.
I don't see this ending, Dylan. They've been doing this for so long now, I do really think that, as you said, the hamster wheel is going to keep turning.
They had a good thing going last year, like when Stinger was still going good. You had the great feud with Kodage and Harada, the match where he hit the big German off the top rope, like everyone loved. That was a great match. They had a great blood feud there, like great brawls and things like that. They had the stupid stuff with Hayata and Yohei feuding, yes. That has been going on for far too long, the Hayata and Yohei team. But overall, I thought the junior division was in a good place last year. You had Tanaka, Suzuki, you had obviously Harada and Kodage feuding. You had a lot of good pieces there. Even, you know, Tadasuke was, you know, a decent worker at the time. You had good pieces. But right now, they've ruined everybody. Like, there's nobody here that, like, to me, even like Harada and Kodage, like, yes, I love them, great talents, but how could I be interested in any of their matches when this is what we have for them? Like, if they go back, they could easily win these titles match back next month. And what would it mean? Nothing.
Nothing.
So, I have no interest in any of these guys, and they have great talent. Like I said, the talent is there. It's the booking that is the problem. But if I were a junior, I'd be desperately trying to move up right now. Any one of these guys, any one of them with talent, not Yohei, but everyone else, they should be trying to move up and, you know, try to do better, because this division, and it makes no sense when you look at the division of the booking of the heavyweights. You had this amazing storylines in both of the main two title matches. Why are we not getting that in the juniors? There's no reason we can't have that. We just had it last year with Kodage and Harada. So why can't we have that again with who we have? And we had it the year before with Suzuki, remember? When he came back as the heel champion,
yeah.
It's like, look, this junior division sucks without me, and now I'm back. Like, that was a great storyline, and he was a great character. So why can't we do that now? What is stopping them? It just makes no sense to me. And I'm very, very disappointed with how everything has played out, because I was excited about this Momo no Seishun Tag reunion, but it's all went down the drain at this point.
It really has, and who knows, maybe next weekend Kotaro Suzuki and Salvador de Oriente win the title. Who knows?
That could easily happen. The titles could easily change next weekend or next month, and it won't matter at all. It just really disappointing stuff overall. I mean, I guess maybe this is about pushing Harada, like they didn't want him to be double champion. I don't know. It's just stupid how they went behind this. This easily could have waited until he wasn't the champion, but I don't know. I thought this all sucked, and I was very unhappy at this point in the show.
Yeah, but this show is going to turn around next,
yes, yes,
with Kaito Kiyomiya versus Kenno. What I thought was just a great battle over anything. It was a great battle between these two wrestlers, and again, one of those matches in the Noah pace that is so much different from any other pace that we get in the big matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling, for example. We have it at 8.19 on Cage Match. What do you think about this one?
I thought this was a great match. Like, totally agree with your thing that you said, that the show turned around at this point, because this was a really strong match and a great next chapter of their rivalry with Kenno and Kaito. I think they're really building something that can be considered one of the great Noah rivalries. You know, in the next few years, this is going to be a legendary feud for the company. And I think they're doing a great job of advancing it in noteworthy ways. Even though, again, like, the outside-the-box storyline of this, I don't know if I like it or love it or dislike it. Because it's basically, this feud is now built around Kaito appearing on this love show. Like, this, trying to score a date, pretty much. And Kenno has taken aim at him. And so I cut all these crazy promos on Kaito, and basically said, like, "Look, he doesn't deserve these women. He's not a real ladies' man like me," and all that. So he's cutting these wild promos. It's very funny, and it builds up to their rivalry that they've had ever since Kaito came back. They've done a great job of building this feud, and like you said, this was just a great, intense fight. And I also love too, at the end of the match, you know, the closing stretch, you mentioned it earlier, the clap crowds kind of being an overrated talking point. I thought the crowd was getting into this for you know, at the end of this match. I thought they were doing a decent job for the restrictions and all. I thought they were showing up for this show, and finally they have something worth a damn to watch on their show, so they were really happy with it. And I thought it was a really, really great match by both men. Great layout, they built well, and I thought Kaito especially really stood out here with a lot of his selling underneath, making Kenno look great. I thought that it was a really good match overall.
I was just going to say, it's very comparable to the roles in the main event, actually.
Yeah.
Where Kaito in this match played just this great baby face, and Kenno is an absolute believable dickhead, an absolute believable heel in the situation, and he got the great heel finish with the sleeper hold, the trunk bundle sleeper hold, the Dojima sleeper finish, where he just wouldn't let go of Kaito, and Kaito tried to fight but couldn't really fight. And obviously, this was one of the builds that led to Kenno later challenging Kazushi Sakuraba for a title match down the line. So, yeah, great stuff overall.
I absolutely love the way they built that move, because they started it in the N1 tournament, and mm-hmm. he used it to great effectiveness during the tournament. And me and Rob, when we were reviewing that show on the Patreon, we were always like, wow, they're doing such a great job of building that, because we've been a little up and down on Kenno, especially as a heel character, because we're like, sometimes his character comes across too over the top and all kinds of other stuff. But to me, this chokehold finish that they built up is so cool. And such a great, well-done storyline that him using it protected Kaito. It was a great finish for Kenno, and they built it up throughout the entire summer. So I loved everything about this. This was great booking and a great match. Like you said, totally opposite of the junior stuff going on. How do you go from what we saw in the junior tag match to this? Because this was great booking all around.
Right, right, right. Next up, we had the GHC Tag title match. Kazushi Sakuraba and Takashi Sugiura defended the title against the Ems Alliance of Masakatsu Funaki and Naomi Chimaru Fuji. 21-25. Sakuraba is on the best run of his career. This one was more of a buffer match. They did some cool stuff here and there, some groundwork that was very good. I thought that we didn't get enough of Funaki and Sakuraba. That was unfortunate, though. They left something on the table here. But this match was more about to just display these four guys and have a match in between the two singles title matches, so it was fine.
I thought it was electric whenever Funaki was in, especially. I think he's a great addition to this roster. And I like you said, the only problem is that they didn't do enough with Sakuraba and him, because I think they could have had a huge, like, great, great run of technical wrestling. And Sakuraba, I've absolutely loved his addition to Noah. I think he's been a great signing for Noah, a great person to bring in. I love this team as champions, Sugiura and Sakuraba. Perfect hand-in-glove fit, perfect role for both men, too, because it's a great place for Sugiura to be, and it immediately puts over Sakuraba as a true threat. So I think this team is awesome. I loved when Funaki is in. Mara Fuji, I really am not a huge fan of in 2020, but still, he did fine, for his role. I think Funaki was clearly the star of the team, though, in-ring, and I think they could have had a really great match if it had been more like that. But instead, we still got a good match at the end of the day, a good semi-main event, and like you said, a good buffer and a totally different style. As you mentioned, there's a lot of similarities to the layout. Obviously, the main event went a lot longer, but there's a lot of similarities between the two title matches, the national title and the heavyweight title. So you had this completely different style of match to break it up. So I thought, again, a good place for the show, good booking, and a really good match. I thought this was a strong tag title match between them, and I hope we see more from Funaki. I would love if he got some kind of title shot in the future, because I think he'd be a great opponent. I don't think he's somebody I would put the title on, but just for a throwaway title match, or maybe even a national title match, like just to have him challenge, I think would be a great match.
Sure, why not? Why not? But the main, Goshi Ozaki, Katsuhiko Nakajima. I was surprised by the finish. I really thought that they would go with Katsuhiko Nakajima, but there has been some talk lately, Dylan, that Pro Wrestling Noah is maybe looking for Goshi Ozaki to win the Tokyo Sports MVP award. What do you think about that?
I think that makes absolute sense, actually, to be honest with you. Especially this year, where nobody from New Japan will really make sense as that award, like with the way they book things this year. Why not? Who would you put above him? And the Tokyo Sports World.
I still think Naito is going to win.
You can't do that after he lost to Evil.
Well, he won the title two times this year.
Yeah, but he lost to Evil.
Sure. Yeah, he did.
that would be like calling somebody the MVP or like the best team in the league, and they lost to one of the worst teams.
I know, but New Japan has been winning this award so many times in the last couple of years. I think Shiozaki deserves MVP. Definitely. After this run this year, he does. Still not convinced that Tokyo Sports is going to do that.
Well, the New Japan factor is very strong at the end of the day. If you were to pick someone from New Japan, I guess it would have to be Naito. But I mean, like, he's a, like a really, like, if you look at how they booked, he's kind of a weak candidate. To me, Ibushi has as much reign, even though he hasn't won the title. He did win the G1, but I mean, these awards are not completely on the up and up to begin with, so we can't really go too crazy in it. But I think, okay, let me put it this way: if there was a year a Noah guy could win it, this would be that year.
Yes.
I would say. I think, like, if that was the goal, and they said, "Look, we have a chance this year. No, New Japan is really imploding with their heavyweight title situation. We've got guys saying they don't even want the title in New Japan," which is something I really love about Noah. They've made two titles mean so much more than any title in New Japan on the show, because both of the national title and this match, and even the tag titles to some extent, like, both of these titles feel like lifeblood for Keno and Go Shiozaki respectively. So I absolutely love the way they protected the titles, and I think, like you said, maybe at the end of the day, maybe the New Japan influence is just going to be too strong and Naito's too popular and they just go with him anyway. But to me, if there was a year, this was the year to try it. So I have no problem if that is the case. But still, on face value, what's another month as champion? I think if you think Nakajima is the better candidate to be the champion, which I think a lot of people would say that, and a lot of people would say not only that it's also a logical end to this title reign. I think that they should have still gone with Nakajima. Personally.
Personally, I thought this was the right moment too, but I can see their way of thinking there. Maybe they really want this MVP thing.
Not so fast. Wait a minute. We forgot to mention something I have in my notes. We had to bring it up about the last match. We have to bring out Chono.
Oh, right. Oh,
Yeah.
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 That's true. I did a show on the Great Muta with my buddies from the Ring Fuchs podcast too, where we talked about Muta and Chono too. And it's funny that Muto has been in Pro Wrestling Noah now for a couple of months, and now Masahiro Chono turns up in Pro Wrestling Noah. And Muto has said that whatever he does, Chono appears there too, and that's exactly what happened. And so now, apparently, Masahiro Chono is the manager of Sugiura-gun.
We all thought it would be the M's Alliance that he
Yes.
joined. Why couldn't they have that? And now he turned heel yet again. But we also had Hollywood Jarina as well, who that's a celebrity involvement there. So that match had all the stars when you think about it. I wrote that in my notes. I was like, oh crap, we need to talk about Chono coming in, because and they tried to do an angle where it was like a really confusing thing, but then he ended up joining Suguragoon and is now like their manager. I wonder if he'll end up doing a match in the future for Noah.
Yeah, they kind of teased that, but with whom would that be?
Muta, obviously. Great Muto for the GHC heavyweight title in 2021, baby. Let's hope that doesn't happen. What if that seems like a logical match to me. They'll probably do all kinds of smoke and mirrors and bullcrap to cover up for it. But I think that would be the. I didn't. No, wait, no. Keno talked about having a match with Tamura, which would be a much more entertaining match than anything Chono could do.
Sure.
But Chono, he did have a match in All Japan one time when Shiraishi was still around, and it was horrible. So, who knows what they have planned for that? It doesn't make much sense to bring him in, to be honest, just to be a manager. So you think they have some kind of match in mind for him. Him versus Sugiura. One-on-one. He turns on Sugiura next and
Let's
splits
hope
up
that he
Sugiura.
just doesn't wrestle.
That would be the best option, but we have Muto as well. Why is it that Noah's bringing in these New Japan guys, like these New Japan legends that really don't have any? I mean, like, okay, Chono did have a title match against Kobashi once before, but nobody thinks of him as a Noah guy or anything like that. Like, these guys really don't have any cachet that much, so.
Dylan, the thing is, who is a Noah legend that isn't around? Like, Kobashi is there, and who else is there?
They can bring in Kawada every now and then.
Yeah, mainly an All Japan guy, and
Yeah.
I don't think that he's down to doing any kinds of wrestling angles.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Listen, it's not about the angles. Hey, he was there at that Baba show.
Doing commentary, yeah.
Bring him in, him and Kobashi on commentary. And then they team up to face Chono and Muto in 2021 return match.
No.
Okay, no, that's not going to happen. The only one that would really make sense is if Kenta left New Japan, like bringing him back would mean something, I think. But other than that, I think pretty much like you said, all the Noah legends at first, like for the first 10 years, were all Japan guys at the end of the day. So there really isn't that many Noah legends. If Morishima ever got himself like in shape or whatever, like okay mentally, if they could bring him back, I think he would mean something.
Yep, Takeshi Rikkyo would be there, but he's retired too due to injuries.
Yeah, he's old and broken down, but he's a good dude. But yeah, I mean, like that would pretty much be it. Like if they could get Kenta or Morishima, that would be it. But I still don't know if bringing in these old broken down Noah guys to wrestle or New Japan guys to wrestle is the right call either.
No, I don't see any benefit from that.
Yeah, that's really my main point. But like you said, there's nobody. I guess you can bring in if you want to know a guy. But I don't think these guys have that much cachet with Noah fans.
No. But let's move on to the main event.
It was good seeing Jarina.
It always is.
Yes. So let's get to the main event. This is the match everybody was talking about. Like 83 votes on Cage Match, as we're talking about right now.
Yeah, overall, this title reign that Goshi Ozaki is on has been really great. And we've talked about that on our last show, too, where we kind of sung the swan song on it because we thought it was going to end. So he won the title from Kaito Kiyomiya on January 1st, 2020 in a match that is rated 9.04 on Cage Match. Then he had this meme match with Katsuhiko Fujita. It still has a rating of 8.12. Then he wrestled Akitoshi Saito on basically on the Misawa Memorial Show with a rating of 8.13. The match against Maro Fuji in August has a rating of 8.63. The 60-minute time limit draw against Kenno has a rating of 9.09. And then we have this one against Katsuhiko Nakajima. As you said, we have a very, very high rating, 83 votes, 9.51. Wrestling Observer, 4.75. What did you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, like 9.51 is astronomically high. That's match of the year level. You know, I'd be interested to see where this would rank at the end of the year when it's all said and done. Because I think you can buy this being a top-level match of the year. And the voters have responded to that on Cage Match and other places. You know, look at the buzz online it got. You know, even Big Dave Meltzer himself jumped into review. He doesn't really watch Noah that much anymore. But he made sure to watch this one and gave it high marks. Everybody liked it, pretty much. And I liked it, too. I mean, this was an incredible match, I thought. I have to say, this to me was not my match of the year or anything like that to me. I thought it was a great match, a great main event, but I don't know if I would go to 9.5 levels. This would be a great, great match. Don't get me wrong. There was a lot to it, but I have to say that it did go a little long, and I thought some of the earlier stuff wasn't as entertaining as they would ramp it up to be at some of the middle portions. I think, too, that the finish caught me off guard a little bit, to be honest with you. And I really thought that Nakajima was going to win, and I thought it was the right time. But we got a little bit of a surprise finish, too, which is not a bad thing. I just think that overall, it was a great, great match. I don't think I would have it on the Match of the Year pedestal. That's a lot of people do. So maybe I'm in the minority here. But, I mean, these guys had a great, great match. It was like, super intense, super hot action. Like we said, it kind of combined a lot of the positives of the big Japan main event we talked about with Sekimoto no Kobayashi and some of the layout of Kenno and Kaito as well. Because, like you said, Go was the total babyface of this match. I wonder where they're going to go next for Nakajima after this. And that was my main question, even more so than the match or anything like that. I also didn't like, it's not that I didn't like, I was a little taken aback when Go, for whatever reason, whether it was something happened with him, or he couldn't hear, or whatever. He was on the outside, and he kind of blew a spot where he was supposed to get back in the ring to the count out. The referee had to kind of be like, hey, like, come on, man. Like, you gotta get in the ring. Like, I know I'm counting, but, you know, I gotta stop, so you get in the ring, please. You know, and he popped back in. He's like, oh, sorry. They jumped back in. And they also had a massive kind of screw-up with the they tried this top rope Hurricane Rana that got messed up, and it looked kind of dangerous. But...
Oh, yeah, right. But I thought they really saved it well.
Yeah, they did a good job, you know, overall. And I thought it was great, a great storytelling when, at the end of the day, when Nakajima hit his big vertical spike, I think everybody bought that as the finish. So mm-hmm. when he go kicked out, you can see Nakajima. That was like the first time in the match, other than maybe on the Hurricane Rana botch. But that was like the first time he showed like, whoa. Like,
it actually was the first time in the whole story that he showed weakness.
Yeah, he was like, wait a minute, like what's going on here? Why haven't I won? What do I have to do to beat this guy?
And that was so great, because the whole story was built upon that Goshi Ozaki was the weaker part of their team, because remember when Nakajima turned against him, Nakajima said that he really didn't need this, but Shiozaki tweeted, I needed it. And this was brought up there. And that is why I thought this match was so incredible and so great. And it probably will compete with Miyahara and Zeus, former match of the year. I didn't think it went too long. It was a 42-minute match, but I think that they used their time well. Yes, there was some early parts that didn't really matter later on, but I think that you rarely find a match where that isn't the case, mm-hmm. that the early ramblings don't really play into the rest of the match. I thought the work that they did.
Can I make one more point too? I also loved, we'll get to the finish because that was like my favorite part of the match, but yeah. I also liked how they did a lot of kind of callbacks to Noah's history in and of itself.
Almost, yes, you know. Exactly.
So I Go is the perfect, like, he's the, like, the one guy, him and maybe Sugera and Marufuji, but those are the guys that could do, like, get away with this and it not come across as like kind of lame, you know. Like, with him it totally fit that they had this little back and forth deal, very much an ode to Sasaki and Kobashi with their battle. It went on and on and on. What did you think of that stuff?
Dude, I've seen Katsuyuki Nakajima live in WXW years ago. He wrestled Ricky Marvin, I think. And I've seen and I've heard these strikes live. And that was a time when Nakajima was much lighter.
Yeah.
And these kicks and these chops. And this is what comes across much better in this day and age, with the crowds not being able to show to show reactions other than the clapping. These chops and kicks were so loud and so intense. And it was built upon that Nakajima just kicked the shit out of Goshi Ozaki's arm, so he couldn't move this arm anymore. And Goshi Ozaki, being this crazy great babyface that is able to sell this onslaught onto his arm and onto his body so well, this connected with me on such a high level, and I was feeling Goshi Ozaki. Goshi Ozaki was in so much pain, and I was just saying, come on, dude, just win this match, get it over with. They got me into this match so much. And in the end, then he did the moonsault, and he landed on his shoulder and couldn't do the cover. What a great way to display that the kicks and the onslaught actually matters in the match, and that he's not running through adrenaline, which we see a lot of times in a lot of matches. He's hurting. And he has to go to a different move to finish, because the moonsault just wouldn't cut it. Great stuff all over. Nakajima, incredible heel. As you said, he used the vertical spike that didn't get the job done. But they've put over the diamond bomb in the N1 victory. That was the move that he won the tournament with. And if he had connected with the diamond bomb, that would have been it properly. But Goshi Ozaki was able to fight off the diamond bomb and then come back. So, man, absolutely incredible stuff.
I also thought it was a perfect end. Like you said, you kind of mentioned the whole storyline, and I thought it was like the perfect end, the finish of this, because like you said, basically this all started off with after the turn, Nakajima was like, saying these comments, saying, oh, he didn't need me, and Go said, I did need him at the end, and it was like totally like the perfect babyface moment, almost. And it came down to him having to, you know, like basically this guy who was like brother, you know, these guys were like brothers, and he had to keep this title and to avenge everything that happened. He had to kill him pretty much with these lariats and just destroy him. Like he couldn't let it go. He couldn't win with the moonsault. He had to hit the big shot with the lariat, and he did it. He destroyed him with a bunch of lariats and won the match. I thought it was like the perfect finish to the match.
Yeah, it really was. And
this was a great ass match, man. This is going to be up there. I think I was trying to be a little too wishy washy. Like this is going to be up there as a match of the year candidate, I think, for both of us and a lot of people. I would put it above that Zeus match, especially after what happened with Zeus not winning. The story, no question, was much better done here than that match. And that's kind of a thing we were talking about off the air. That's something I wanted to bring up after watching this show, because Noah, not everything's perfect, like to say the least, with the junior heavyweights and with Muto. But it's clear this is a company. Like to me, I enjoy following this company from month to month. I enjoy the big matches, and they're oftentimes some of the best of the year. And you compare it to a company like All Japan, which I think is always, always, always going to be linked with Noah for whatever reason or another. I mean, we know the reasons why, but still, even though that was a long time ago, it really doesn't. There's totally different situations now between both companies, but still, they're always going to be linked. And we kind of talked about this off the air. What has happened in All Japan for the last 8 months? Like pretty much, like since Suwama won the title, since the Infants came in, like how much is different in Noah compared to back then to All Japan now?
Yeah, no, All Japan has been doing nothing. They've not been elevating anyone. Well, they've elevated Atsuki Aoyagi, but that's it.
Yeah, there's no stories that's been told with the title, pretty much. They had their version of the tag champions feuding, and that got blown off with a month with little fanfare, and the match wasn't nearly as good as this.
No,
I think any logical person would say that. Like you said, nothing's really come of the junior division since Susumu lost the title. They had some good matches with Iwamoto, but it still feels like we've been here and done this many times before. The juniors.
It feels
so
like,
crazy.
Yeah, it feels like in All Japan they desperately try to think of something that Kento Miyahara can do, except for being Triple Crown champion, and they fail to come up with something worthwhile.
Especially if you watch their tag league this year, because they're losing a lot of matches and totally wasting the push of a talented person and Aoyagi. But never mind, you know that's totally true what you said about Kento, but I think we see it now in Noah. Kaito has done just fine without being champion in Noah this year. Like he's had a great year, ended it on a high note with this good match. I mean, he didn't win the title, but he had a great match, and the whole year he's done good stuff. He was in the finals of the tournament. He had good matches, singles matches, carrying the company, having like a little bit of a challenge series against guys like Inaba. He had a match with Kenny Okada in May, which is really good. Him and Kotage had a singles match, so he was doing stuff this year. And I think they've done a great job. That's something you have to give Nosawa credit for. Kaito is the crown jewel of this company. Like, I mean, these guys are feeding for the title, and that's great. Nakajima might not be after this. But Kaito is the ace of the company at the end of the day. He's the one that they have to think about for the future. And I think they've done a great job of having him do something and not in the title picture, as compared to seeing someone like Kento or Okada in New Japan, who's had a horrible run this year. Well, not being in the championship picture. I think Kaito is one of the most well-rounded aces, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for this as well, for carrying this role so well. But I think they've also put him in position to succeed this year. So I think that deserves a lot of credit. You have a great champion in Go. it's hard to tell with the, you know, the overall impact of the attendance is, but every metric we have says that this has been a successful title reign for Go this year. And if it ends off with an MVP run, then I think you have to say mission accomplished for Noah in 2020, even with whatever flaws you want to point out with Muto and the juniors.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And I think I talked you into this match being
You did.
Higher up on your match.
And this was a great match. The more we talk about it, the more we go through it. Like you said, I mean, there's nits to pick if you want to point out the stuff.
Sure.
But it was a great, great match at the end of the day. Where do you think they go with Nakajima from here?
Yeah,
I think that's one burning question.
My next question now for you two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think they will, within the next 6 months, go to the breakup of Kongo.
Yep.
Since Kongo is a term in Japanese for diamond, and Katsuhiko Nakajima, of course, is from Diamond Ring, I do think that eventually Kenno is going to be pushed out of his own stable, with Katsuhiko Nakajima taking over and them reforming the aggression under the banner of Kongo.
That's an interesting idea. I definitely think what you said about Kongo is true. I think everybody sees this coming. I don't think we're being clairvoyant and using our mystic abilities.
But sometimes the obvious is the right way to go because it's logical and it works out.
And for whatever reason, they do that with the heavyweights. Like not the juniors, but the heavyweights they do it with. So I completely agree with you. That's the right call. Nakajima leading Kongo going forward, letting Kenno do his own thing, and having a great feud for the title, or you could have him do a tag team again. Although I do think that that is a little bit of him, the aggression coming back. And they were a great team. I don't think they had the popularity of Axis.
No, anywhere close.
Yeah, not anywhere close. They were a good team, though. They had good matches. I think that's kind of a downgrade for Nakajima, to be honest with you. If he's going to go to tag work, but it feels like that's the only way he can go, is this Kongo storyline.
Doesn't necessarily have to be like they need to be tag team champions. Kitamiya obviously is not on the same level as Nakajima.
Yeah.
But in a situation where Nakajima moves up to be the leader of Kongo, he would need to have a tag team partner that can take the falls.
Yeah. And that makes perfect sense at the end of the day. But let's say, what if he won the national title from Kenno? And, maybe a few months from now, maybe on the Misawa Memorial Show or whatever, they have their match and he wins the title. And it's down to Go and Nakajima both as champions. They could build that as a rematch down the line and maybe have another chapter of this.
And just this weekend, Noah announced that they will have a special announcement.
That's right.
And a lot of people from the video believe that because Kenta Kobashi will be in the announcement, a lot of people believe that they will announce a Budokan show.
And I agree with those people. I think that's exactly what's going to happen, is that they've been talking about it for years now, ever since Kenno won the title originally, like in 2018, late 2017, early 2018. So they've been talking about that Budokan ever since then. And I think that time is coming. I think they've proven to be successful over these last 2 years and really rebounded well. To me, I think they've been, from a overall standpoint, like a growth standpoint, and I felt this way after last year too, but I think as an overall growth, I think they have to be considered one of the best promotions of the year. They are the promotion of the year in my book, with just how things have gone. And if it caps off with a Budokan Hall show, that's a really big deal for Noah to get back to Budokan.
It's something that the company, the wrestlers, and the fans have been longing for so, so long. And if Noah gets back to Budokan, that would, for everybody involved, that would show that this company is Major League again. And that, I think, is what the Noah fans really need and want.
I completely agree. I mean, the numbers on Abima are promising. Again, we don't have live attendances, but the metrics we do have show that they're ready for this. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out if they go to Budokan. I mean, listen, when they went to Sumo Hall, remember, everyone doubted them.
Yeah.
And saying that, like, this was going to be a terrible show, and it wasn't. It worked at the end of the day.
We said that when there is a big show, people will come to see the big show.
Yep. If you build it, they will come. I think I was like the only person. I was pretty accurate on that because I think I said 5,500 before mm-hmm. that. And everyone else said, nah, it'll be three. If they get 4,000, they'll be happy. And I was like, nah, I think it's going to be good.
We still don't know how accurate the number was, but the visual was very good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, you never can take everything at face value, and especially in the Japanese pro wrestling world. But I mean, from what we saw, I think it's pretty close, if not accurate. You know, they didn't exactly beat DDT, but they got way closer than pretty much anybody thought. So that worked a lot better than anybody thought. And who's to doubt them if they go to Budokan next year? Who's to say that that can't be another success? And like you said, at the end of the day, just like the Sumo Hall show at the end of the day, I think that had a lot. I think that made them feel much more major league than they were before that at the end of the day. Because imagine if that Sumo Hall show had come out and they did 3,000 fans.
Yeah.
Like we'd be saying that would have been such a negative publicity for them.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it did so good, and they've jump-started that into this year and done a great job with Go as champion, had storylines that the people connect with Axis, and it seems like the perfect time for Budokan, and I think that's what it's going to be. Maybe they'll surprise us, and it'll be something completely different, but I think it's going to be that, and I think it's I'm very interested to see what the date is, what kind of plans they have for that show, but that would be a great match if that is the plan for it, to see Nakajima versus Go. And they're both in the main event. I think that would be a great next chapter. You could also, I could see them wanting Kaito. Maybe that could be his ascension back up to the top of the ranks. You know, you never know. There's a lot of options for them right now. They've done a great job with the heavyweight division in general. And I'm interested to see where they go next. I think it's been a very, very strong year as the year. Do they have any more title matches for 2020?
Sure, they do.
Cruel. Yeah, Go's going to have another title match.
Yeah. They do have the show next weekend in the Yoyogi National Stadium, another arena that in regular times, the second stadium they run, in regular times that would be a layout for 3,000 fans, approximately. They have a card for that that says in the opening match is Kenya Okada and Yasutaka Yano in a singles match. Daisuke Harada, Atsushi Kotoge, and Yuta Miyawaki take on Tadasuke, Hao, and Nio. Hajime Ohara, Yohei, and Seki Yoshioka take on Katsuyuki Nakajima, Masaki Tamiya, and Manabu Soya. Junior Tag Team Title, Yoshinari Ogawa and Hayata defend against Kotaro Suzuki and Salvaje de Oriente. GHC National Title, Kenno defends against Kazushi Sakuraba. Semi-main of the Ems Alliance, Naomichi Marufuji, Keiji Muto, Masakatsu Funaki, and Yuko Miyamoto against Kaito Kiyomiya, Shuei Taniguchi, Daiki Inaba, and Yoshiki Inamura. And for the GHC Heavyweight title, Go Shiozaki versus Takashi Sugiura.
Yeah, that's right.
They have the gift in Nagoya on December 19. Junior Heavyweight title, Daisuke Harada defends against Tadasuke.
Yeah, so one more run. I think Sugiura beating Go would be the wrong decision.
It would be dumb, but yes.
Yeah. And he's already a tag champion, so like I think the odds of that are low. You never know, you know, with these championship titles, the heavyweight title. But and Sugiura is obviously always a good challenger, and they're going to have a great match. You know that these guys have great chemistry. They're going to beat the hell out of each other. Go's going to end up, you know, all bandage at this point.
Yeah.
The bandage market in Noah is going way up when Go is champion. I think that's one thing that you can for sure say on that. But yeah, I expect Go to win that match. And like you said, MVP, I think he's as good a bet as any this year. But that's for the end of the year to decide, I guess.
Right. You know, given the heavyweight style in pro wrestling Noah, a great fit would be Yuji Hino, wouldn't he?
Yes, you wrote this down earlier, and what a wonderful way it worked out with us talking about Noah, because I completely agree with you. He would be the perfect fit for Noah's style. I think he's a very good worker at the end of the day, especially, you know, wherever he goes. In 0-1, he had some really big matches, you know, some really cool, hard-hitting type of matches.
Yeah, he's been only there for two years, but he's basically won everything in this time.
Yeah. You have to feel like... you know, here's a fun fact about Yuji Hino. Me and him have the exact same birthday.
Oh.
Yeah, he was born on January 27th, same as my birthday. So we have the birthday alliance could challenge the M Alliance at one point.
The Beast Alliance.
Yes, exactly. That has nothing to do with names, but birthdays. but yes. And he's a great worker. Very hard-hitting if you're a fan of, you know, Sakamoto Kobayashi, Go Inoue, Ishii in New Japan, the big guys in All Japan. It's like he's of that ilk, pretty much. And he's cut from the same cloth. Maybe more middle fingers than those guys. But besides that, the way he wrestles is right from that same cloth. And he'd be a great person if Noah could go after. Or at least maybe bring him in for shows as a freelance guy. You don't have to sign him, per se. But I think he'd be somebody worth targeting.
Yeah, you know, he has been on a JTO show recently. He wrestled Takamichinoku, obviously his trainer back in the day in Kaientai Dojo. So what I can imagine is that he will base in JTO and wrestle in other companies from that base, because JTO doesn't run that often. That could be a possibility. But I want to go back to this 0-1 thing, Dylan. The wording of it was so unconventional and so weird. He was at this press conference with Shinjiro Otani, where they announced that he would be leaving the company at the end of the year, and they immediately dropped the NWA Intercontinental Tag Team title. They could have lost the title too, but they vacated it right away. And they only had won it on November 3rd. From Towa Iwasaki and Tsukataka Sato, two guys that 0-1 is behind. And on top of that, Yuji Hino also completely devastated Towa Iwasaki in the Fire Festival. Iwasaki only has had 3 points in that festival, in that tournament. There was a countout win over Yoshikatsu Yokoyama, and he lost to Yuji Hino in 6 minutes. And then they lost the tag title to Quiet Storm and Yuji Hino. And then they do this press conference where Yuji Hino sits there, cries, and says that he's leaving 0-1 because the wrestling style has changed.
What?
Yes. That's the reason that he brought up. He doesn't feel at home anymore because in recent months the wrestling style in 0-1 has changed.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
It has not.
Do you think that?
It has not. No.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That is some absolutely weird stuff going on. But then again, Dylan, it's 0-1.
That's the key point of it. It's 0-1 at the end of the day is the best way to go about it. But still, it's not good when all these guys are leaving. That has happened this year.
What is the shell? They have a Sumo Hall show coming up in March.
That's right. Yeah, for the 20th anniversary.
And there's no match they can do except for Masato Tanaka versus Shinjiro Otani.
They'll probably try and bring in Daichi for that show.
Yeah.
I bet they probably reach out for that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, though, for a Sumo Hall show, we talked about the Noah Sumo Hall show. This is going to put your theory to the test. if you build it, they will come.
You know?
I don't know about this one.
Naoshi Sano once booked Sumo Hall because he just wanted to run Sumo Hall and had all his indie friends on this show. And I think this show drew like 1,000 fans. And I can see 0-1 doing less than that.
Yeah. Like I said, that's...
But that may then again be a case of a big show that draws big, but I don't really see it.
No, that would be a huge surprise if that is true. I mean, that totally proves your point. Like, nobody could ever argue with that point if that's true, because that would be a huge, huge surprise if the 0-1 show.
Any wrestling company from now will just book big arenas because the fans will come nonetheless if 0-1 does it.
They should. like if the fans come out for this and they do a great show, they totally should. I mean, the thing is, maybe what he meant, I don't know, maybe translations went wrong or something, but maybe what he meant was that there's a new generation in 0-1, because they're pushing the young guys like Iwasaki, the champions, the JTO guys.
Yeah, but he's won against them.
The style changed, though. Like, so that's what you don't understand. Like, he feels like a relic of a bygone era in 0-1 now, even though he was only there for 2 years, but he's still a relic of a bygone era. I mean, they had, I will say this, him, Hayato and Yasu Kubota in the opening match for the 0-1 title, that's a new era.
Yeah, that was due to the fact that Hayato had to go to Nagoya for the GTO show.
Yeah.
Same day. That's why that was the opening match, and that's why Yasu Kubota challenged for the title.
Yes. And because he had the good publicity.
Right.
From his incident we talked about. Good dude. Listen, shout out Kubota. World title challenger. I don't know. Like I said, not everybody needs a challenge for the world titles at the end of the day, especially not in the opening match. Like, if that's the reason, just don't do the match to have your title being. Like, if you're going to have the title match at the opening match, what? Like, that's just no. Like, that's not a good look at all. And, I mean, he's a really young guy. And he's shown a lot of promise, Hayato. And it's worth mentioning that, these guys like Sato and Hino, Hidaka to a lesser extent when he left earlier on to Kaiwa, like, Junior's not as much, but the heavyweight guys, do they really make that big of a difference if they're there or not? Like, what has 0-1 been doing the last year with these guys?
It doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah. I don't think it really makes a difference at all for 0-1. It could be a great thing. And we've seen that Sato, maybe he's, winding things down a little bit. Now we have his tag title shot coming up, so maybe he'll have a home in Big Japan. Hino, basing in JTO, that doesn't mean anything really. Like, they're just too small. Don't run any shows that much. So he needs to find a bigger place to go. And I think he would be a great addition to either All Japan or Noah would be his most obvious landing points. And he's wrestled in All Japan before, to be fair. So I think he would probably have more connections there. But, in Noah, I think he has many more fresh matches. And they're just a better company, in my opinion, than All Japan. So he should go there of the two. But we'll see. We don't know. The world of Japanese wrestling right now is really weird, especially around 0-1 and Big Japan related people, I feel like. So it's just kind of crazy times, but he's a worthwhile name to follow if you're not familiar with 0-1 or you don't watch it, which I'm sure a lot of people don't. But they've done some good shows and he's had some really good matches. So check him out if you get the chance. Maybe he'll come to a bigger company and he'll be somebody worth keeping an eye out for.
Yeah, worth keeping an eye out is a show that actually aired on Nico Nico, not the finals of the Fire Festival, but the second to last show, actually. Masato Tanaka and Hayato Tamura had a time limit draw, 30 minutes, and I really thought this was a great match. Once again, displaying that Tamura is a great talent, he was able to wrestle a 30-minute match, and that's something for a wrestler that only debuted last year. I think last year? Yeah, 2019. September 2019, he had his debut. And he's here wrestling big main event matches in 0-1. That's crazy for him. And he's going to defend the 0-1 world title against Masato Tanaka on January 1st. So that's going to be a great sequel to their first match, I think.
That should be really good. He's a really good talent. It's just going to be, I think it's a good idea to kind of start a youth movement in 0-1 and build around guys like him, Iwasaki, even though they didn't do that in the Fire Festival, unfortunately. But those guys, they can build around, and hopefully they can do something good. I do think it's troubling, though, that so many people have left this year. And I don't think – and listen, they've survived all kinds of stuff. Like, there's been many times people have wrote that company off. So I'm not going to say they're going down until I see it.
when 0-1 dies, that really is a moment in time where you have to worry for other companies too.
Yeah, absolutely. But they always seem to find a sponsor of some sort that comes in at the 11th hour to make things better for them somehow. But I do think that they've got a long way to go. Towards relevancy. Like, Noah, it feels like they're right on the cusp. 0-1, they've got a long way to go.
So, they have a long way to go. We had a long way to go from the first minute of the show to now, Dylan. It's been a good show, I thought. We've brought up a lot of topics here on this Eastern Lariat episode. Is there anything else that, at the end of the show, you want to touch on?
Yeah, I really liked both of the shows we talked about, the Big Japan and the Noah show. I think the Noah show was, you could really safely skip everything except for the last three matches. But those, especially the two singles titles matches were really, really strong. Those were the two best matches. Mm. I think as a show, the Big Japan show was like really good. If you skip the deathmatch, you know, the death matches, you'll have a pretty solid show. I really loved the opener, the tag title match, and the singles match as well. So I think that was a good show as well. We had a very important conversation about coronavirus, unfortunately still continuing as we head into the Christmas season. Mm. And it really feels like, you know, the year is winding down a little bit. I mean, we've got some tournaments going on in All Japan and New Japan. DDT has a tournament going on. I'm covering them all on the Patreon as well. Yeah, yeah, like a crazy person. Even all every Best of Super Juniors and Tag Team match, or World Tag League match, I've watched, I've covered. Many of them have been boring, but I have watched them all and given my opinions on them. And there's been some stuff that's surprised me. People like Doki have come out of nowhere to really prove himself and show that he's a really good talent. You get guys in All Japan, that tag league's really dry and not very entertaining in general, but they have some guys there that if you're interested in. They have Team ECW. You mentioned that earlier on. They got the main event in Corcoran Hall. You get Tajiri main eventing. When will he leave All Japan? I don't know.
Never. Listen,
we got Jiro out of here, and we never thought he'd leave either. So if he could go, Tajiri could go too. Total Triumph Team is calling to Jiri. That's where he belongs.
As you mentioned it, Dylan, I still have a Total Triumph show to watch, and I'm going to do that after the recording is finished. Yes.
Yes, that should be interesting to watch, but that's hopefully the next show, Tajiri will be on it and far away from All Japan, because we need less.
No, I don't want Tajiri in Total Triumph Team.
That's where he belongs. I mean, a lot of the guys on Total Triumph Team are probably not going to be that much better than Tajiri. So he belongs there. They're in VKF, Niigata Pro, Secret Base. That's Tajiri's run. That's where I'm booking him. If I took over the wrestling scene, that's where I'm booking him. But next month should be interesting. Like I said, none of those tournaments really matter that much that I talked about. I mean, I am covering them all. The DDT tournament kind of does, and that could be interesting. But everything else, don't worry about it. I'm really looking forward to seeing how the year closes out. And, you know, when we take a look back, we take a second to reflect on the year. Yeah, inflect and reflect on the year that was 2020. One of the weirdest and strangest and most unusual years of rest history.
That's so why the final show of the year will be very interesting with our awards season coming up.
Yeah, that's. I'm already starting to think about that a little bit, about the award show. Who's going to win what? You mentioned the MVP, and ever since you said that, that's been in the back of my mind this whole show about it. Like, who really would be the MVP when you think about it? But we will have that. That's a story for another day. That's going to be a lot of fun when we get to that. But hopefully everybody enjoyed the show. I love being back with you, Striga, and hopefully everybody enjoyed that. Follow us on Twitter at Eastern Lariat. You get good stuff, even secret stuff, because we both follow a lot of Japanese Twitter stuff, just like the Susumu scoop we had about the birthmark. We promoted that, and my man Nappon did a great job. A friend to the show and a friend.
I really don't know if it's a man. I can't say. Maybe it's a woman too. I don't know.
Listen, he or she, everyone's welcome to be friends with Eastern Lariat. Everyone's free to watch shows and wrestling, especially indie wrestling. The indie shows need all their support. So, man or woman or child or anything else. I got mad love for Nappon, and shout out to Yuya Susumu debuting in a new best gimmick, and shout out to all of you listening to the show.
Exactly. So this has been the Eastern Lariat for this time. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.